It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. What an amazing show ahead for you. Jason Calacanis joins me along with Ian Thompson. Of course, because Ian's here, we're going to have to start by talking a little bit about Brexit and what it means to the tech community and the community at large. And I have a feeling we're going to get pretty heavy on this one, so stay tuned. Apple drops the headphone port. Is that a big deal? It may be so. In fact, maybe the end of Apple, according to some. And we'll talk about SolarCity and Elon Musk and his plan to make the next trillion-dollar company. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT This Week in Tech, episode 568, recorded Sunday, June 26th, 2016. A dongle for your dongle. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Squarespace. Squarespace is the simplest way to create a cover page or beautiful website for your portfolio, blog, business, or online store. Enter the offer code TWIT and get 10% off. And by Trunk Club. Get clothes that fit and look amazing without ever stepping into a store again. Trunk Club will help you create the wardrobe you've always dreamed of with your own personal stylist. Go to trunkclub.com/TWIT and join Trunk Club today. And by audible.com. Sign up for the Platinum Plan and get 2 free books. Go to audible.com/twit2. And by Automatic, the connected car company that improves your driving and integrates your car into your digital life. For more information, visit automatic.com/twit and enter the code TWIT to get 20% off your purchase and free shipping. It's time for TWIT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the great tech news of the week with smart, intelligent tech journalists. Or sometimes people who are just like in the middle of it, like Mr. Jason Calacanis, who lives tech, breathes tech as an angel investor. Mm. Is that what should I call you, an angel investor?
You know,
early stage investor.
I started obviously my career as a journalist. Now I do angel investing, but I still run companies too. So I have 3 hats I wear.
Once a journalist, always kind of. You always have that bent, that interest in looking at things in a unique way, right?
You know, asking questions and having that BS meter is...
It's in your head.
It's in your head. Yeah, you're constantly, talking to people, trying to form the next question, which is actually why so many journalists wind up becoming investors, because it really is about asking questions, listening, being present, and then coming up with a follow-up question.
And, of course, deal flow.
Deal flow is good, yeah. You know, so if you're MG, Siegler, or... O'Malik, you know, they knew everybody from being a journalist. Mm. It's a great way to cut your teeth, and then you leverage that into an investing career.
And meanwhile, Ian and I will just sit here in the corner with the holes in our socks
together.
Rubbing our pennies. Ian Thompson, also here from the register.co.uk. And was just coincidentally, Ian is Scottish by...
About half Scot, yeah. My father's side of the family is Scots.
Where did you grow up, though?
I grew up in Derbyshire in the Peak District, in a tiny little village that no one's
ever
heard
England.
Of. Yes. Very twee place.
So when you came in, you said, I only got a few hours sleep on the night of the Brexit vote.
I started listening at about lunchtime UK time because of the time difference. It was about 5 a.m. before it was just like, I've got to do an interview in about 3 hours' time. I need to get some sleep. But it was...
You couldn't.
To be honest, my wife learned an awful lot of English swear words that she probably shouldn't have been introduced to at that point. It was a very fraught night. The last few days haven't been much better. And I'd like to keep it light and cheery, but basically the UK is screwed. So
there you go. There you have it. I mean, it's funny. From our point of view across the pond, I don't think we really know what to think of it, right? On the one hand, I understand how voters might be afraid of untrammeled immigration. Mm-hmm. The UK is one of the richest of the UK of the EU countries, or UK isn't even a country.
It's
one of the richest, and so as a result, it carries the weight of Greece and other countries that are suffering. It also you're going to get your share of immigrants coming in who are looking for work in one of the richer countries, just as Germany does. So I understand the reluctance to keep your borders wide open. I also understand the reluctance to let Brussels decide things that would normally be decided by Parliament.
Oh, certainly. I mean, there are strong arguments, and my family is split largely 50-50 between voting Remain
as
or
was,
Leave.
By the way, we should point out, the country. It was only a few percentage points.
It was 52 to 48.
Yes, yeah,
so 4 points. Although, if you look at demographics, it was the over 45 set that voted for exiting
over,
the EU.
Over 50s were overwhelmingly vote Leave.
And the young people did not want to leave.
No.
The young Why not?
Well, because they want the right to live and work in 29 other countries, should they have the desire to. They recognise that Europe has kept the peace for the last 70 years, which is longer than the continent's managed for the last 2,000.
By the way, that is, at least from my point of view, the one thing that here in the States we might look across the pond and worry about. Because one of the things, the source of two world wars now.
Yep, and Putin is getting frisky in the sidelines, and the head of NATO could be coming from the U.S. as the best ever president when it comes to running.
So a united Europe. To us, looks better for peace.
Absolutely.
From the point of view of technology, there's economic benefit to negotiating one treaty with 29 countries than multiple treaties. And we'll have to negotiate separately with England, of course.
If you look at the demographics of just Europe as a whole, and it's under a billion people, and it's a very slow growth culture, you have... population growth is a fifth of other countries, other continents. So people are getting old there. What do people do when they get old? You know, they want to protect what they have.
Well,
so
that's the thing, I understand.
World,
and it's kind of the same reason Trump is supported. We want to go back to the days when England was England.
Yeah.
And England wasn't a bunch of curry shops on the corner. And we want to go back.
Okay, on the curry front, I would have to say.
It's pretty great curry.
You were talking about what immigrants give to this country. Before immigrants brought curry and the rest of it to this country, we had scones, and trust me, they're really boring.
Bangers and mash.
Yeah, we had bangers and mash, we had fish and chips, we had roast beef.
Clearly
and Yorkshire
I'm being
pudding.
Facetious.
Oh, yeah, no, indeed.
It's going to be a disaster.
Britain has benefited
But it's going to be a complete disaster in terms of economics because...
Oh, from pure economics, I mean, the biggest winners out of this are Ireland. Because if you're an international company that wants to get into the Eurozone, your first choice, if you're an English-speaking country like the US, was to come to the UK.
Right.
If the UK isn't in the Eurozone anymore...
Yeah. And by the way, that includes Ireland. That includes
or
Ireland.
Or Berlin.
Well,
Berlin
Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland. But Southern Ireland has the very favourable tax systems.
So that's where Google is and Apple is.
Yeah, this is where they funnel all their money through
to avoid paying taxes. So this doesn't affect that.
No, but I mean... If you're actually looking to get along in, you know...
Is Southern Ireland in the EU?
Yeah.
It is.
Oh, they're firmly in the EU. And in fact, Northern Ireland could be going into the EU.
Well, that's the other
thing. They're now talking about a referendum to rejoin with Ireland to keep their EU status.
If you're nostalgic about jolly old England, you might be a little nervous about the notion that Scotland is not thrilled about this.
Scotland's going,
60-plus percent to 38%.
Every single constituency in Scotland voted to stay.
And, of course, Scotland had recently had an independence vote that failed.
Yep.
Now they're thinking they will have another independence vote, and they will apply to be in the EU.
Yeah, and they'll do
it. Which is kind of mind-boggling.
Everything I'm seeing from the Scotland vote is, if the EU membership is at stake, the Scotland independence vote will win. And I think it's an enormous mistake for Scotland, but at the same time, they will win.
But speaking as a tech company, I could still go to Ireland. I could still go to Scotland.
Yeah. And you don't have to pay
I might not have to go
prices.
To England. I might want to go to England. But
just think about data privacy. Where are you going to store your data?
Well, exactly.
Let me bring this up, the European market. It's like you're now going to have – the reason the EU is so transformative, I think, for tech companies was we could look at that region as one region as opposed to building a terms of service for every region, building a product for every region. And now it's going to be, okay, we have to build a product and an office in the UK and in the EU and in this country. You're competing against South America and China, United States. It's going to set them back. Of course, they might make some better decisions for themselves. We'll see how that turns out. But it is something – there is something in the air about not trusting the government, not trusting politicians. Yes. And we see it here with Trump, obviously.
There is a much larger story, and it's being told here, too, of a complete distrust of what up to now have been the elites, not just the political elites, but the media elites.
Mm-hmm. Intellectuals.
The intellectual scientists. Elites. And so that's pretty clearly happening in the U.S. I think that the Trump movement and to a certain degree the Bernie Sanders movement are about
same thing
turning our backs, turning their backs, because as a media elite, I guess I'm the one who's suffering here.
Turning your back on elites, I expected the pay to be a lot better.
Yeah, I should at least get a makeup person if it's going to be media elites here. Yeah. No, but you know what the thing is? If what I really think this comes down to jobs and the economy. If the rich keep getting richer,
yeah, it's income inequality.
People in the middle are looking and they're saying, wow, all these rich people are getting so rich. And then the middle class is getting ground down. And the poor don't feel there's a path. There's no path to get to the middle class. Right. And the middle class is stuck. And if you look at something, just one example, education and college education.
Oh, huge, yeah.
It used to be that you had this great path to success, which was city universities and state universities were either free or cheap.
And we've gutted it.
And now Bernie Sanders comes out and says, hey, let's make college free again. You know what? That's a brilliant idea. It gives people a path to get out of poverty. And you know what? The elite are like, yeah, we don't want to give free college. I, as a member of the elite at this point in my life and previously being poor, let's make college free again. Let's give people a path. Because if people feel ground down, they don't trust Hillary. They don't trust intellectuals. They don't trust global warming. And they're going to vote for somebody like Trump. And who can't complete a sentence and changes his plan every other week.
And I'll be honest, I completely understand. I'm not unsympathetic to that. It's a little bit like let Rome burn.
It's a burn it down vote.
It is. That's exactly
Glenn Greenwald in The Intercept kind of surprised me. And I'm not sure I completely agree with him, but he says Brexit is only the latest proof of the insularity and failure of Western establishment institutions. And this is exactly what he's saying, is the failure of the elite, the political elite, the media elite, the government elite, to provide an opportunity, and it's a reaction to that to people who feel disenfranchised.
No point.
And I completely understand that. So now, if you're Google, you might not be completely against this. Google's had horrific times with the EU in privacy, the right to be forgotten.
It
doesn't necessarily. The EU is not necessarily a great place for American corporate interests.
Well, okay, it's not a great place for American corporate interests who want to carry on the way that they do in America.
But Microsoft's been censured by the EU. Google has been censured by the EU.
But why were they censured? Microsoft was censured because the EU took action that the U.S. government wasn't prepared to do.
Yeah, but the EU did dopey things. The EU said, well, your Internet Explorer browser is a monopoly, just as our Department of Justice tried to do in the 90s.
And then completely wussed out.
But what they ended up doing is saying, well, what you got to do is a browser ballot. They insisted on a ballot. When you install Windows in Europe, you get, okay, which browser do you want to be the default? No. This was a terrible solution. The cookie.
Really?
Why? Yes, because it doesn't serve anybody in any way. The cookie banner that you see everywhere now as you travel around the internet is directly attributable to Brussels because of their privacy concerns. Misguided privacy concerns about cookies.
Okay, we could argue long and hard about misguided.
But how does it in any way do anything but annoy that banner? Do you just, you click OK, right?
It depends on the site. I'd just check out their terms and conditions, and then I decide whether or not I'm going to click on it.
Yeah. Everybody else just clicks OK and says, get rid of that banner. It's
then
just an annoyance.
They've had the opportunity to make the decision.
The right to be forgotten is an abomination. It's a misunderstanding of how the internet works. It's an attempt to edit history, and you'd think the Germans of all people would know better.
Now, the Germans are the nice parties.
Now that
Europe,
they're the nice people, I know. But
welcome
but
to
I
another
say,
episode been, of This Week in Going There.
There's been a string.
We're going there, people.
There's been, no, I'm not going there yet. I will. I'll get there. Don't worry.
We're almost there.
But there's string after string of ill-informed, bad decisions against U.S. tech companies coming out of Brussels.
I don't
disagree.
There is one good thing. When you have to deal with one governing body, as opposed to 20 or 30, it does make it for the United States, the U.S. companies, a little bit easier.
Google still has to go to France and deal with the French courts, and Germany and deal with the German courts. So no, it's not. It doesn't. The EU's decisions do not eliminate the courts in France and the courts in Germany.
They provide a crucial buffer zone between allowing companies to do exactly what the hell they want and actually holding themselves to account in some level.
There is an anti-corporate sentiment that comes out of Europe. Europe is pro-government, anti-corporate, just as U.S. is anti-government, pro-corporate.
Say the EU is anti-corporate. It doesn't work like that. You're dealing with 29 different nations.
At the end of the day, people get to choose which country they live in. The United States happens to be full capitalist, and we suffer the ramifications of that.
There's pros and cons.
The UK is pretty much pro-capitalist.
You know, people in the United States would like to turn it into Denmark or Norway and, you know, get a year off for maternity and have people have 3 years of job severance or 2 years of job severance. If you do those kind of things, while they seem great on a individual basis, sure, we all want to take a year off when we have a baby, or we all want to have 2 years of severance. The problem is then people don't create cutting edge companies because they don't want to take the risk of being personally liable for people's salaries, and they have to go a little bit slower. That's why the United States comes up with all these great companies, and Europe comes up with very few to none.
There's very little VC in Europe. It's very difficult to get
that. But the corollary of that is that in the US, you have no safety net whatsoever. So if you actually want to go and start your own company, you've got to abandon the choices of healthcare because that's something you have to pay through the nose for. You're weighed down with student debts, which to my mind is quite frankly economic serfdom.
I think we agree on that. I mean, I think that's...
Yeah, listen, there are going to be some ramifications.
But I thought we're also rugged individualists, and I think that this is...
I'm sorry, you have this appearance of it. It's like, oh, we're all rugged individualists. Now, where's my Medicare check?
It's in the DNA. I'm not a rugged individualist, but...
Well, you started the station. You've been pretty damn good.
I can't chop wood, but I do think that there is in the DNA of this country this sense of independence and self-determinism that says we don't want a safety net because that is some sort of nanny government. We want the opportunity to succeed or fail on our own rights.
Right.
But I agree with you, Jason. We failed at that as well because their opportunity doesn't exist, and income inequality is growing, and that's why you're seeing a rebellion.
I mean, social mobility in this country is lower than UK elsewhere at the moment.
Yeah, no, it's clear there are some real failures here.
And adding to all of this is the fact that while we are arguing about the particulars of socialism versus full capitalism versus everything in between, there is a bigger trend that's occurring, which is artificial intelligence, robotics, could lead to the end of employment, could lead to a massive deprecation of jobs. And if that happens, you know, this kind of weird behavior we're seeing, like the Brexit or Donald Trump
phenomenon, this could be the tip of the
iceberg. Operation Wall Street, I believe, was like the dry run. It was like this little peek into what discord could look like. And if you look at what happened in Spain and Greece with full-scale riots, you know, this could become our life.
Corner.
Yeah, we could be sitting here 10 years from now doing an episode.
Last month, Foxconn laid off, replaced. Mm-hmm. They said, we didn't lay off these 60,000 workers, but they replaced 60,000 workers with robots. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that 60,000 people didn't get other jobs.
Yes. Right.
This is the beginning. This is happening in China. Mm-hmm. This is the beginning of a complete transformation. I agree with you.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the advance in AI and robotics machine learning is going to bring around, in terms of in the job front, something that's going to make the 30s Great Depression look like a cakewalk.
Well, but if you ask Mark Andreessen, and by the way, I don't think Mark knows what he's talking about, but if you ask Mark
Andreessen...
Certainly
not when it comes to India.
His position is, well, what's going to happen is the cost of goods is going to drop so low that it's effectively free... And so you don't need a job. Is that credible in any sense?
Well, there is something that, I mean, Star Trek kind of envisioned this, which is there's going to be this life of leisure and people are going to find their pursuits. That is a possible utopian vision that could happen. Free electricity, free food, free clean water, and even free housing is possible in our lifetime. We could provide that for everybody. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of on the way to that when you think about welfare or food stamps or solar. So there is this beautiful utopian society. What it's going to take is a complete recalibration of what our expectation is. In the United States, we're going to have to expect maybe that this minimum viable income, you know, a universal income, which is a lot of tests going on around that. Maybe that becomes a possibility. We're going to need transportation to the suburbs and out to the rural farms.
Mm-hmm.
But the second half of our lifetimes are going to be quite interesting, and it's going to require a level of leadership that we just don't see today.
That's the problem is I can see that, but the getting from here to there is a massive disruption. And seems like it will not be a peaceful transition.
Oh, God, no. There's going to be blood on the streets.
Well, that scares me a little bit when you say that.
No, it scares me, too, because anarchist mobs don't build chip
fabs. Is it too
late?
Is there anything we can do?
It's not too late.
It's not too late. There's definitely going to be a lot of... I am an optimist about it. I think that, you know, there's so much wealth and prosperity in the world, and it's just not equally distributed yet. But if you think about something, you know... People can buy a pair of jeans today. This is where Mark's points do make sense. If you think about what it cost to buy a pair of jeans from when I was a kid, 1985, when I was 15 years old, it was $20, $25 to buy a pair of jeans. If you go to Old Navy or to Walmart, it's $10 or $20 to buy a pair of jeans. And you think about the price of milk.
Because it's made by Chinese slaves.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, slaves, or they would consider it that they're becoming part of the middle class.
Right.
They're off a farm. They have running water. They have hot water.
Until they figure out how to make jeans with robots.
Right.
And then back to the farm, in which case it's back to the paddy field.
So this is where we have to decide as a society how we're going to distribute wealth. And we're going to have to close up certain loopholes, like the fact that we have a capital gains tax where we don't let individuals own stock in private companies, right? You have to be accredited investors.
So doesn't the Jobs Act change that?
It's starting to, and it's just a...
And you think that's a good thing?
Of course, because 97% of the people in the country cannot invest in private companies. They can't invest in things that could really
have
returns.
You have to meet certain income standards. And the theory is you have to be an informed investor. It's too easy to take advantage of people.
But that's where the opportunity is, and then... They can't and then the people who are on the top are only paying capital gains tax. So they pay this very de minimis amount of tax compared to income tax. There's a big gap between those two things. So we just have to maybe get rid of the capital gains tax. We're going to have to tax people a little bit more.
And higher income tax, no capital gains tax.
You're going to have to wipe out the income tax. You're going to have to just provide people with free housing if they needed or free food.
This is so utopian.
It's happening in Utah right at the moment.
Yeah, there's a lot of experiments.
In Utah, they don't have a homeless problem because they give homeless people houses.
Yeah, housing first is a big
movement. And actually mentor them into finding a job.
Well, here's the thing. Taking care of a homeless person is going to be roughly $30,000 to $90,000 a year because of emergency room visits. And all the other things we have, food stamps and Medicare, whatever.
Also basic crime and,
Everything.
But you're talking about a progressive agenda that this country will never
embrace. It's the antithesis of...
This country has already embraced it. What do you think Medicare and Medicaid are?
Yeah, this is the tipping point we're in the middle of.
These are socialist programs.
This is why it's a 52-48 vote.
Yeah.
It's because we're on this tipping point where half the country feels they're left behind and half the country feels like we got to keep it the way it is. And there's no clear path. And that's why I registered mayorjason.com.
Oh, you're going to run for mayor of San Francisco, aren't you?
I'm just thinking.
Rumor has been floating around.
I registered the domain.
And by the way,
because
having a reality show, as we now know, is a great boost
clearly
to your political career.
No, yeah. I actually think that one of the great failings right now of the technology industry is that people like Sheryl Sandberg and Mike Bloomberg, Steve Case.
The so-called smart people.
Well, they're clearly extremely successful. I know all the individuals I'm mentioning are all brilliant. I know them. I've had many conversations with each of them. These are all brilliant people.
And they care.
They care deeply. But you know what? They have to step up and they got to take office. And you know what? When you're on the back nine and you're 50, 60, 70 years old, we have to get these intelligent people to start getting involved in politics. Because the solutions that we face are not solutions that can be solved by career politicians. That's why people hate Hillary.
Yeah.
That's why
this anti,
they just think, well, this person is bought and paid for.
Yeah,
right.
And
this
we
is
can't
why
trust
I think,
them.
Yeah.
And we're going to have a different cohort
on
come
the
into
other
public
hand,
service.
I want to point out Jerry Brown, who was in quietly behind the scenes running California as a career politician, we might add, better than anybody has in decades. And this is a tough state because it's a weak governorship. We have a crap legislature. And yet he's managed to do some things that we need. I mean, we're dying in a drought here.
Yeah.
Mm. And he's managed to do some things to force some things through that actually have made a difference.
Yeah.
So maybe a career politician is not the bad thing. Maybe it's the right career politician. I don't think that. Look, if somebody says, I want to devote my life to civil service, and I think that's clear, Jerry Brown's an example of that.
Yeah.
He has not enriched himself in any way by being a civil servant.
You can't paint with one brush, obviously, but we do feel that the system, I think overwhelmingly people feel the system's rigged.
Mm. No, I understand that
both for the rich
feeling.
And capitalists and for politicians.
Yeah.
And the fact that those two groups are so in cahoots where these entrepreneurs and capitalists are paying off the presidential candidates and the representatives
blatantly.
Is even more reason for the
blatantly.
burn it down party
right.
is going to get bigger and bigger. And you know what? Maybe Trump becoming president and Brexit is part of an overall process that will lead to inspiring the Bloombergs, who should have run this time. And I think Mike Bloomberg made a horrible mistake in not running this time. I think he was electable. And I think if you look at how horrible this has all turned out for our country, how terrible the dialogue is, if Mike Bloomberg was out there, I think he becomes the obvious vote, the most qualified person.
You see, this is what really worries me about the Brexit vote, is that everyone, even the Leave campaign, didn't think they were going to win. The head of the Leave campaign, Nigel Farage, or one of the heads, Nigel Farage.
They thought it was a protest vote, not an actual vote.
I mean, he went on TV and he said, basically, when the vote closed, we think we've lost this one, but, we may come back to it later on. And then as the night went on, he realized how close it was getting. He changed, and it was just like, yeah, we'll get them now. And I agree with you, something has got to change, Jason. But the caliber of the people who are now taking this over are going to burn
Boris Johnson may well be the next prime minister of England.
They're opportunists.
Like, don't even get me started on that. But,
these are opportunists, just, you know. But one of the
Boris Johnson, I think that's very clear.
Boris Johnson is the archetypal opportunist. He decided literally at the last minute he was going to vote
for me and my career and not what's good for the electorate.
I mean, it's arguable that Trump's entire campaign is a trolling campaign to build his publicity. I mean, a lot of people felt he ran
to help him sell more condos. That's what started
Now
and what surprised him is his success. And I think he's probably a little challenged by the notion that he could win.
I don't think he wants that job.
No.
It's a big pay cut, for one thing.
It's disturbing.
But at the same time, he's going up against Hillary, who is the ultimate establishment candidate.
Right.
And I think one thing Brexit has shown us is that establishment candidates who are relying on, well, it couldn't possibly happen, they couldn't possibly vote for that person, they will. They really will. And I'll say it here on this show, I honestly think Donald Trump will be the next president in the U.S.
All right, let's make a – can you mark that? And keep that clip.
Well, it's 3-1 right now on Betfair and these places, right?
Like, yeah.
3-1 he'll win?
No, 3-1 against.
Against. If you look at the polls, it's 3-1 against.
Sure. But if you have a major terrorist attack in this country in the next 2 months before the election, he's in there with a bullet, quite literally.
Well, I think the thing that's really interesting to me is that this is clearly a beginning of a revolt against the, not just the political class, but elites in journalism as well. In the media, in political, in government, and I don't think it's an unjustified revolt. I hate to say it.
I mean, this is how
what's sad is there are opportunists like Boris Johnson who will say, "Ah, let me ride that wave."
Oh yeah, he would. He
to
would
personal
much,
power.
Yeah, he would much rather reign in hell than serve in heaven. You know, I mean, it's as simple as that. This is all about him.
A man without hope is a man without fear.
Yeah,
and there's a lot of people who have no hope right now.
No, exactly, in both our countries, and it's a really difficult situation.
That's a Daredevil quote for those of you playing along at home.
Thanks for getting the Daredevil quote in, and
Frank Miller.
Yeah, nothing like him. We're going to take a break. I know some people are saying, "Well, this is political, not technology," but I think it affects every
the technology revolution is what's driving this in the lack of jobs and automation efficiency and AI. These things are dovetailing. Yeah. There's no difference between society and technology.
20 years ago, Jeremy Rifkin wrote a book called The End of Work that foretold this. It's been obvious. We've known this has been coming for decades, and we haven't known quite what to do about it.
It's coming faster now.
And like a lot of technological revolutions, it's starting, it's exponential. It's
Arthur C. Clarke predicted this. I mean, he basically said, you know, after the collapse of communism, 30 years later, you had the collapse of capitalism, and you got a mishmash between the two, which actually worked for the majority of people in the world. Now, he was wrong about a lot of his predictions, but he was right about some.
So I'm thinking I want to move to Scotland. That's pretty safe.
It's good. I will say, as a half Scot, I love the country. I think you might have problems there as a Californian because the winters are brutal.
My mom's maiden name is Dunlap. My middle name is Gordon. We are Scots going way back, and brutal winters just make you stronger.
Yeah. You say we are Scots. There's a lovely shop you should visit in Edinburgh. It's the official Edinburgh kilt shop, and they have a
date. Oh, I've got me plaid. I've got my own plaid.
They have a database there, and it's hilarious going in there. It's just like, what's your name? Oh, the Van Duisenbergs from Ohio. Yeah. Hang on.
I've got the
You're a Campbell clan person.
Yeah, I'm a Dunlap plaid.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's...
I've got my own sporting.
Me too, the Badger handbag, which makes using a laptop on the train really awkward because you've got to have your legs apart to get the sporran down. If you've got your legs apart when you're wearing a kilt, then you're possibly...
Do not wear a sporran on the train.
No, absolutely not. And certainly don't spread your legs when wearing a kilt.
Where are you moving, just out of curiosity?
I'll tell you where the everybody thinks the safest place to be is.
Where is Larry Page's island?
I can't say, I know exactly where it is.
Oh, he has one. All right.
He does, actually. That's,
of course he does.
But I'll tell you what.
That's what I think probably is. You could tell us a little insight into this, but I would, if I'm one of these mega rich, are you not making plans for
future? They all have plans. I'll tell you. There's a...
Like a safe room?
New Zealand is the place. Yes, there's a lot of people. Mm. Here's the thing.
Ray Ratcliffe already is there.
New Zealand is self-sustained. I know a lot of people who've got ranches there. They've been to them twice. Like, they literally built them out.
As long as you like mutton, you're safe.
You can fly there.
Yeah.
Nobody else can get there.
Yeah.
It's rich in natural resources, and that's the parachute place.
Yeah.
Really?
You have to pull the parachute. New Zealand is supposed to be the place.
I have heard this as well. I mean, there's an American company.
Does Larry Page have a go bag at the door just waiting?
I don't know what Larry Page has a go bag. I do think that a lot of affluent people do believe that, you know, there's a 10 or 20% chance that things could go very badly.
Yeah.
The storming of the Bastille might be just a few years away, and you don't want to be the guy on the guillotine with your head in the basket.
We saw a little peek at it when Operation Wall Street actually went to Mike Bloomberg's townhouse in Manhattan, and they all went outside of it and they protested. And that was when you really said, hey, if you squeeze the middle class too much and people don't have hope and society becomes not equitable and people feel like they're out of control, you know, there is a burn it down moment. And it's just unfair, you know, the way we've structured society right now. Mm. We have to really think through how people
even
are going to
agree, though. This is the problem. We might all have hearts of gold and really want to do something about this, but there doesn't seem to be a lot of agreement about what to do and how to do it.
Yeah, this universal income, universal basic income is going to
very controversial.
Very controversial, but I think it's going to become less controversial because if you take the sum total of all of the social programs we do and you say, you know what, we're just going to give everybody $1,000, it's going to wind up being cheaper.
Yeah.
And it's going to wind up feeling more equitable. There's going to be a tinge of it's anti-American to just give people a check.
It's
every
socialist.
Month. It'll feel socialist, but
oh,
it also
please.
Might.
I'm sorry. Ask your oil industry about socialism. They get $80 billion a year in government subsidies.
See, you're a progressive
GE
lefty.
Hasn't paid a tax bill this year. In fact, they got a tax credit.
Yeah. And what about Anonymous? I mean, I think Anonymous, which has been very active in Occupy Wall Street, has the skills, and I spell that with a Z, to dox everybody who, I mean, you know, your head and my head, and probably not Ian's head. We'll roll.
Yeah.
Well, up to that. A point.
This week
New
in
Zealand.
Dystopia.
New
no,
Zealand.
I mean, it's there.
I think it's time to, frankly, one of the reasons I wanted to bring this up, not only because Ian was here, but I think it's time that the tech industry and we as journalists face this head on.
Yeah.
We've been kind of looking askance at this and going, you know.
I'll give you a perfect example.
It's not going to happen.
If you look at Zuckerberg, you know, he's been fighting, you know, his corporate mission is to connect the world. A connected world is better. Then they have this little issue about the thumb on the scale with the trending news topics. Fine. Probably like some rogue people just, you know, don't want to link to Breitbart or Drudge or whoever. Fine. But then he, you know, starts kowtowing to the sort of really far right, bringing them in and not addressing any of the issues that Trump brings up. You know, I don't think you have to be political to say, I'm going to look at a policy that Trump has or a policy that Hillary has and address those. Mm-hmm. I think it's cowardice on Zuck's part. If you make $50 billion and then you're silenced by presidential candidates, what's the point of having $50 billion? He should come out and say, listen, Trump's ideas around immigration are insane.
Apple's done this. Apple said
did.
We are
but
not
where is everybody else? Where's Larry Page? Where's Mark Zuckerberg?
Yeah.
Where's everybody else?
Google's putting big bucks into the Republican convention. So is Facebook.
It's just a matter of you don't have to. I understand.
But
like, every
I
time
think
I talk
this
about
is,
this.
I think this is what I was saying, which is a reluctance to look at head on at what might be happening and to say, you know what, we have to take a leadership role at this point.
It's required.
It's still living in hope. You know what? Hillary will get elected. It'll be things back to normal. The elite will be in charge. Everything will be fine.
You can't be silent on something as insane as we're going to pull 10 million people out of their homes and drag them across the border. This is stop. Yeah. We'll just get there. Like, I mean, this is like there's only one corollary to this.
So you brought us there.
I'm going to bring us there for the first commercial break. But that is the that is the issue. You have to address people's ideas.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with addressing ideas. You don't have to be political. I'm not going to tell you who I'm voting for. But I could tell you this one particular idea of building walls and being an isolationist.
Mark said that.
Horrible idea.
Mark said build bridges, not walls.
And then he totally folded.
Yeah.
And then he totally hid. And now he won't bring it up. And you know what? Yeah. It's cowardice, and I think Mark Zuckerberg needs to step up because he has a platform that has 1.4 billion people on it. He needs to let people know, this is the antithesis of my vision for the world.
Yeah. Bravo for saying it. I mean, it just this is the problem with Brexit. This is the problem with Trump, is that far too many journalists aren't willing to maybe sacrifice access for asking some tough questions like, are you serious? You know, Mark is not a businessman. Some of these proposals are
not
insane.
A journalist. Mark is a businessman. Business is fundamentally amoral, not immoral, amoral. It doesn't take stands. His job, his responsibility to the stakeholders is to maximize profits, period.
He's a human being. He represents a platform that lets over a billion people on the planet communicate, and he's already put out there that he wants the world to be more connected, to be more just and more fair, and he created a foundation to do that. You can't take you know, this incredible high road and say you're going to make the world a better place, and then when you have somebody who's proposing something that's going to make the world horrible, then fold your opinion. I don't think you can do that as an individual.
No. Yeah.
I think it's cowardice. And I think somebody needs to just sit there and say, you know what, stop thinking about your shareholders for a second here.
Mm-hmm.
Stop thinking about – and just think about how insane these ideas are. There are some insane ideas out there. They need to be addressed. And people just need to say, listen, whatever you think of Trump is fine. Whatever you think of Hillary is fine. Bernie, just address the ideas. Free college for everybody? That's not a crazy idea. Building a huge border and being an isolationist with China and moving 10 million people across the border, those are crazy ideas. Those are horribly bad ideas.
Yeah, no, I agree totally. I mean, and the consequences are severe. We've seen in the last couple of days in the UK since this vote came through a massive spike in anti-immigrant violence. The Polish, I mean, one of the Polish community groups has just been vandalized, just had their headquarters vandalized. Without the Poles, we wouldn't have won the Second World War.
Didn't the Leave campaign really play on that with a lot of pictures of floods of immigrants coming into the country?
There was a very interesting case where they had a Leave campaign poster, and then they put it, and I know we're breaking Godwin's law on this one, but they used a poster, and it was a campaign, the poster was of lines of refugees coming into Slovakia in 91 after the wall fell. Then that was, somebody then found an old Nazi advert about Jews coming into, and it was the same picture of lines of people coming in, and just that they're here for your jobs and your
wounds. It's easy for us, isolated as we are from the refugee, refugee crisis. How many refugees have we let in?
Oh, very few. Created a few million, but no.
So it's a hard country to get to.
It's easy for us. We're sitting across the ocean saying, yeah, well, that's a bad. I am not completely unsympathetic to this notion of Syrians and others flooding England, and especially with the fears of terrorism. I'm not saying I want to demonize them.
Compared to Germany, compared to...
You know, and I understand. And how's it? It's working fine, or is it?
No, it's working fine. I mean, the one of the reasons Germany wanted these people to come in the first place was because it has a massively aging population.
Right. It's a workforce.
We have exactly the same problem in the UK.
And it's a source of innovation, is it not? A source of brains.
I mean, if you look at all the great startup companies here in the United States, it's typically, and it's kind of a joke in the venture industry, is that you want somebody who's the son of immigrant parents,
or
daughter,
because
they're going to just understand hardship, they're going to care, they're going to want to work harder.
The words of Hamilton, immigrants, we get the job done.
Absolutely.
That, by the way, is a huge applause line in the show.
Okay.
Interesting, isn't it? We talk the talk, do we walk the walk? That's the question. Okay, I suspended all rules of this show, but I think it's something we got to look at. And
no,
one of the things, I see people like Jay Rosen, who I hugely respect, journalism professor at NYU, saying we as the media have to address our complicity in this. And we got to talk about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break. I'm sure there's something in tech to talk
iPhone
about.
7.
Yeah, all right. What's this with the headphone jack? I got to ask you. All right, let's take a break.
Let's take a break.
See, this.
Now on to
Lighter
Fare.
This, you see, it's easier to disagree and fight over small things than it is big things. Big things, you go, oh, God. Small things, we can really tussle.
We can go.
We can get into it.
Yeah.
Hey, I want to thank you for being here. I know this is probably a challenging half hour for a lot of people. A lot of people shouting at the...
screen right now.
Podcast appliance.
Yeah. We're getting a certain amount of, I don't know, the conversation.
I think the chat room's been very interesting.
Yeah, I was going to say. The
reaction on Twitter is pretty good.
The channel's been very interesting. I think there are, of course, a few loons out there because there always are, but there's a lot of people thinking seriously about
this,
and that's what's needed.
I always hoped for with Twit is that we would not be ashamed to be intelligent.
Right.
And we would not try to dumb stuff down in an attempt to curry favor with an audience. And so we trust our audience, and we're willing to to branch into areas that perhaps are uncomfortable or difficult, or even that you might disagree with, because I think we trust you and your judgment, and we don't. I don't want to make this be a place where we just go, oh, it's shiny and bright. I want one.
They're complex issues.
And these are important issues
and
for everybody.
And technology is a huge Absolutely. Factor here driving
I think that's really interesting. Yeah. And it's only that part's only going to expand.
Well, we saw it this week. It's a very interesting time for using technology to actually open up.
It's a good time
to
be a machine.
Well, it's a good time to actually use technology.
A lot of
to
job opportunities for...
If you're a robot, man, this is everything you've been hoping for.
Yeah. They're unionizing.
They don't have to. Our show today brought to you by a Squarespace. You know, everybody now gets a voice. And while that can make a cacophony, it is ultimately democratic. And this is the thing I celebrate about the internet. The best place, the first place you should go is have a website. You got to have a website. It's fine to have your Twitter handle and your Facebook page, but you got to have a website. And this is doubly true if you're a business. A business without a website is like a business without, in the old days, a telephone. This is how people... I don't do business with somebody. I can't go to their website and find out more about them. I don't care if you're a tree surgeon, a plumber, a baker, a candlestick maker. You got to go and make a website. And the best place to do it is Squarespace. You've said it yourself, Jason. Squarespace has completely changed the landscape because web technology is moving so fast. You don't want to hire an engineer to use some web technology that in a year is going to be completely different. You don't want to hire a designer when styles and fads will change next year. You want to let Squarespace do it. They've got the best designers, the best engineers, making the best sites. All you have to do is pick a template, customize it so it reflects your personal style and ethos. You've got a great website. It's mobile responsive, so it looks great on any size page. It's got all the SEO handles, so you're going to get great results from Google. It has e-commerce built into each and every template. They've got new templates for people who want to kind of do magazine-style stuff. They've got the grid-style landing pages, the infinite scroll. You know, this is something that all of a sudden everybody was doing, and if you were to engineer this to buy the technology, it would cost you hundreds of thousands. You go to Squarespace, and you got it. In fact, you get it free right now with their free trial. You get related posts at the bottom, encouraging visitors to explore more. There's author profile pages. Search is integrated into the header so readers can get to where they want on your site fast. That's just one example of the many different templates for bands, for restaurants, for journalists. And now that they sell domains, Squarespace domains, you can get a free custom domain name with an annual purchase. You get access to 24/7 customer support. And instead of those awful landing pages that those other domain name sellers give you, you'll get, if you get your domain, your top-level domain at squarespace.com, a beautiful spam-free parking page. So when you're ready... Brexit. Let's create a Brexit page. When you're ready to start building your page, it's going to be there. But when people come to your site, they're going to see it and they're going to say, oh, that looks great. The cover page alone, that's how I got started. I made a cover page. I said, well, that was easy. Let me make a whole website. Power your business with Squarespace Commerce, the only platform that lets you create, manage, and brand your store in a beautiful way, accept payments instantly. They recently introduced advanced analytics for commerce, which lets you view how visitors are interacting in real time with your commerce, what you get for abandoned checkouts. There's device filtering so you can see who's visiting you and how. It's really impressive. They have this new Squarespace Circle. If you've built three or more active Squarespace websites, and I know many of you do this, you can get the Squarespace Circle, which includes membership, includes advanced guides, organized support, six-month trial periods for new projects, and more. 1 million customers now. That's a big deal. They crossed the 1 million customer threshold. Start your free trial at squarespace.com. And when you buy, all we ask, just use the offer code TWIT. You'll get 10% off and be showing your support for This Week in Tech. Squarespace.com. Offer code TWIT for 10% off. There is a difference between users and daily active users. I learned that on Sunday night on Silicon Valley.
I haven't watched the whole season.
I won't say anything.
Don't tell me anything.
Very funny, though. Yeah. Because lots of downloads. And then they go, wait a minute, what's the daily active users?
What's the DAUs?
It's really interesting how Silicon Valley is not only getting it right, but getting this stuff like DAUs into the mainstream
dialogue. Well, they sent their researchers to like everywhere around the valley. So they came to my poker game one time and they asked me a bunch of questions.
That's really cool. Desire to really get some verisimilitude into the show instead of just making a joke.
Phenomenally talented in that regard, yes.
And if you haven't seen Idiocracy.
Yeah. Love it. Well,
yes.
by the way, prophetic.
I hadn't seen Office Space till I came to this country.
What?
And
oh
I was
God,
I watched
so great.
It and it's like, this is brilliant, you know.
Idiocracy is just going to become the seminal piece of work. It's like a sleeper. It's
somebody
well
was telling me that thanks to Office Space, the swing line stapler had a huge growth, a huge market surge.
I'm sure it's like it's a go-to gift in the offices.
It's my stapler.
Well, I finally understood what all those memes are about for a start.
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah.
You cannot understand our culture if you haven't seen Office
Exactly.
Space.
Exactly.
So great. It's so great.
You hear me?
Of course I...
Yeah,
you're going to give me that TPS report,
oh,
of
God.
Course. Yeah.
I believe you.
I don't want to sit there and I just...
Here he is. There's Milton. Can you hear Milton?
So hilarious.
Can you hear Milton?
Poor guy. He plays it so well.
It is a work of genius. It just...
Pretty great.
Yeah.
There's a swing.
Swinger. I just love when he takes the screws to his like
and the whole
cube
thing.
And the whole thing just falls down. He's like, yeah, I like this much better. Yeah. So classic.
All right, I've showed the total amount I can show without violating copyright, so let's just close that away and put that away and talk about... Thank you, Squarespace.
I use it for everything I do.
Do you? Are you an investor?
I'm not an investor. Okay. Full disclosure, I wish I was. But no, I use it for all my sites because you know what?
They're not public.
Not yet.
Hey, what's the... Okay, so...
Not yet. That's a perfect candidate.
Dan Lyons. Just read his Disrupted, all about HubSpot.
Mm.
And Dan is a cranky fella.
Cranky fella.
I love Dan.
That's a polite way of putting
it. In fact,
we're
trying to get him on This Week in Google as a regular. I think we will. But one of the kind of an indictment, frankly, of this whole system of early stage investing, venture capital, IPO. And I think one of the Occupy Wall Street points kind of redounds to this, which is it's a freaking scam. These companies never, HubSpot never made any money. They were a multi-billion dollar, they were a double unicorn. Raised money on the stock market. Stock price went up. Never made... They're still around.
You're saying never made a profit. They have revenue.
They have revenue.
Yeah.
And they have the key metric, which is growing, fast-growing revenue. But they're spending more than they're making. When did that not become an important factor?
When capital markets opened up so much and the opportunity got so big that people like Amazon would say, you know what, let's take a decade to defer money
but
and just make a huge
sense.
Business. So
Amazon
people are kind of following them.
Amazon built distribution centers.
Yeah.
What it looks like HubSpot and others, I won't single out HubSpot except that I just read this
book. People are very big fans of their products.
What they're doing and others is they spend a lot of money to acquire customers. They basically are buying revenue growth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that looks like a pyramid game to me.
Uber's doing exactly the same thing.
Uber's never made money. I mean, they have revenue. They've never profited.
Well, you know, I've got a little bit of conflict here because I'm an early investor in Uber, but they're profitable in all their major U.S. cities.
So the problem, this is why I don't like the Jobs Act a little bit, is that this is a sophisticated field, and it's very easy, I think, for people like me, unsophisticated investors, to go, well, look at that stock price go up. This has got to be a good investment, and not look at the balance sheet and go, but wait a minute. They're buying customers. They're not making money.
Yeah, so Uber is a revenue printing machine. Like that is a company that
Uber is different. I'm
that,
not
that
actually,
is a revenue printing
you.
Machine.
And it's
just like in the sense that Google and Facebook are. And I'm not just saying that because
it's
the third or fourth investor.
If you look at Uber, it's an innovation there. They're reinventing something.
Yeah.
But there are lots of companies that aren't really innovating that are basically it's a Ponzi scheme.
I don't think people go into it with a Ponzi scheme effort. That would show like I have the intent to get a bunch of money in, not build a real business, and then go to Brazil and run away with the money. What's happened is I do think some people come in and they overspend, and they think optimistically about the lifetime value of customers. So this is where they spend $100 to get somebody to download an app or $10 to download an app. And they think, well, if I keep this person for 3 years and I make $10 a year off them, sometime in year two I'll be at break even. The problem is, you know, with the exception of video games on your iPhone – and some other categories where people are willing to pay a lot of money, and there's whales in the system who spend a lot of money, it's very hard to do. So the app economy was a perfect example of people spent a lot to acquire customers. But then there are other examples, where AOL at one point was spending a lot to acquire customers, but they were also making $30 a month per customer at one point, $25 or $30 a month per customer. So it actually was a major, major...
This is something I wanted to ask you about. Yeah. As someone on the front line, it strikes me, and I get pitches from startups the whole time, yeah. and 90% of them get filed in the circular filing cabinet.
Sure.
Because they have no clear business plan.
Yep.
They have no clear product to... A path to serious revenue and profit, but somehow they're getting money from people. Is it just there's so much loose money sloshing around?
Right, this is what Dan says in Disrupted. He said, HubSpot, the first thing they did, they didn't hire an engineer. He said it used to be you'd have a product. Oh, I got a great product. Now let's make a business and sell this. Mm-hmm. HubSpot, the first hires were marketing people mm-hmm. and salespeople. They didn't even have a product. This is a company built bass-ackwards where they don't have a product. They... building a company around a non-existent innovation and saying, well, someday we'll have something.
It is a product for marketers. I know a lot of people who use it and like swear by the product, a lot of marketing companies. So they definitely have revenue, definitely a marketing company. You know, to your point, Ian, about you know, how many startups there are, it's so affordable to start a startup now. It used to be in the old days, it cost $3, $4, $5 million to get a product
that's
to market.
That's amazing.
Now
that's
it's $30,000, $40,000 to get
thanks
a product
to
market.
Thanks to AWS and all these.
Yeah, and if you're a developer, it costs you nothing to get a product to market. So what I do is, you know, I'm looking for people when I invest who can get their product to market, get a little bit of traction, and then I invest.
Right.
So they've just sort of figured out enough. There is a problem of people who have never built anything and people give them money. And in a hot market like it was the last couple of years, you did have people give $1 million or $500,000 to somebody to build an app based upon some designs on a piece of paper.
They're so excited.
That's
there's
a little bit out there.
There's
the Yo
so
app,
much.
Yeah,
the
Yo.
App,
yeah.
Yeah.
So are we in a bubble?
Well, for sure, there were a lot of bubble-like behaviors. and so usually what happens in these bubbles is there's a bunch of real stuff
mm-hmm.
that's solid. And, yeah, right. there's some things that are not. The good news is when things blow up now, it's not like the dot-com bubble where you had houses of cards where you had 3,000 or 4,000 employees and there was no way this company was going to make it. And 3,000 people were going to be outside with their Ariane chairs, you know, selling them for $50.
By the way, it was a great time, 2000, 2001.
You could buy
really good time to furnish your house.
Ariane chairs were $50 and they cost $600.
Fabulous time.
So it's not like that right now, but you do have what I call zombie companies where it's just people raise $250,000, $500,000. They get to $5,000 a month in revenue, $10,000 a month in revenue. It never breaks out, but it can't be shut down.
Yeah.
The founder's making a salary. So you just get a lot of that like Walking Dead kind of experience.
There have been a few big ones. I mean, the whole Theranos thing was just...
Well, that just might be straight up fraud, right? So in that case...
Really? You're going that far
on that one? I think it could be straight up fraud.
Interesting. You see, I figured they tried to make it work.
I do put a qualifier of could be, and I based the could be based upon how they responded to a crisis. When you have a crisis of that magnitude, yes.
They circled the wagons.
Yeah, and they fought it to a level that was deranged in my mind. I've never seen a company, you know, attack the journalists personally and not go with facts, and then they had to restate every lab result.
Mm-hmm.
It's unprecedented. And then Walgreens backed out, and nobody's seen the technology. You know, there's a very easy way to respond to all the criticism, which would be to show people the technology and to vet the technology. And in a healthcare space, for those who don't know, they were doing blood and they were drawing very small amounts of blood to do very complicated tests. Everybody in the world said it's not possible. So if you...
But this was another example of a product that sounded hugely innovative, would have made a huge difference.
Of course.
Had it worked. I don't think it was fraud in the beginning. I think Elizabeth Holmes, its founder, who didn't have any expertise in this area.
No, she was a kid.
But really wanted...
Dropped out.
Thought this could be done, hired the best scientists. Turns out, I think what happened is, after much research, much effort,
they failed.
It doesn't work.
And then they kept the fraud going.
They were stuck because they had a unicorn, and they had a lot of investors, and they had a lot of money, and they couldn't say... Or can you? Can't you at some point say, hey, we were wrong.
That, and in fact, that's the thing that makes me lean towards fraud. My gut...
Mm-hmm. In a very non-legally binding way.
But it feels to me like fraud.
Ev Williams did with Odeo, where he said, you know what?
Perfect example.
We started a podcast company. Turns out Apple's going to do it. So there's no business here. Here's your money back.
Right. Mm-hmm. Here's 80 cents on the dollar. Here's 20 cents on the dollar. Whatever it is.
He gave the investors as much money as he could back.
Yeah. The logical,
by the way, gave him a very good reputation.
It's the most credible thing you can do. I've had it happen many times. I had a company that got into trouble with a government agency who said, hey, you know, what you're doing is very innovative. I won't say the name of the company, but this government agency, which is, you know, a humorless agency, said, this is not cool. You need to stop. And the person came to me and said, hey, they told us we can't do it. And I was like, okay, what's your plan? They're like, give the money back. I said, sounds great. What's your next idea?
Not a bad thing to do, especially if you have faith in the founders.
Of course.
And their intelligence. Well,
and these guys are dealing with a government agency who's saying, hey.
What are you
going to
do?
What are you going to do? And they're like, we're going to fight you tooth and nail. We're going to attack the journalist, John Kerrywood at the Wall Street Journal. We're going to say that they're on a jihad against us. It's like, listen, a Pulitzer Prize winning journalist from a Pulitzer Prize winning organization has their teeth hooked into you, and you're responding with ad hominem attacks. Like, just
let's see the data.
Nixonian.
That's
When they restated the data, a doctor came out and said, I sent somebody to the emergency room based on these results. The new results you're giving me, I would not have sent that person to emergency room.
Yeah.
This is life and death stuff.
You don't
stuff.
Mess with this stuff.
You do not mess with this stuff.
Furthermore, I mean, there's a lot of evidence. We don't know what really happened. I'm sure that there is an investigation ongoing right now.
Yeah.
But hiring a board that was not medical experts, but was generals.
Henry Kissinger.
Henry Kissinger.
I know. I
mean, is he still alive?
<here's>, no. Yes, he is. Amazingly.
Apparently, he's on the board of
Thanos. He's apparently never going to die. I believe he's drinking the bloods of children.
Yeah.
No, it's lizard people. I've been
Jennifer Lawrence will be playing Elizabeth Holmes in a movie about Theranos.
She can play delusional.
Adam McKay is going to do it.
Yeah.
Of course, the guy, he's done some great
it's going to be awesome.
Movies along this line. What was the one he did with, was it The Big Short? Yeah, The Big Short.
Yeah.
Great
film. Well, he's going to have to explain a complex topic and do it entertainingly, and it'll be great.
As they got somebody in a bathtub with bubbles and champers, I'm happy.
That was hilarious, that scene.
That was a brilliant
That was how they explained
credit CDOs, yeah.
Yeah, let me explain how you do a credit swap thing.
And now, I can't say
I thought it was
there,
a little gratuitous, but I have to admit, I enjoyed it.
It was fun.
Yeah.
It's
totally gratuitous, but hey, you know. I watched Mad Max with pleasure.
There's an Enron, there's a Bernie Madoff. These things happen.
These are great stories for movies, but not so good for little investors who...
But the thing is, the little investors aren't going to get hurt this time.
It was all the big VCs. And
a lot of the big VCs did not participate. She got a lot of... the big VCs, a lot of the ones I know, passed because she wouldn't show them the tech.
Right.
And in fact, one
story
I heard...
They were smart enough to say no.
Well,
it was what the pension funds who invested.
Yeah, I think it was a lot of private equity people and private funds. One of the things I heard from somebody, this is a secondhand story, was like somebody they knew was going for a job there, highly technical person. They wanted to hire them. They wouldn't show them the tech before they joined.
Sorry.
It's like, okay, well, this is getting kind of weird now. Very weird.
You see, I feel kind of nervous about Magic Leap for much the same reason.
Yeah, that's another one where they've got billions of dollars. But if you look at those billions of dollars, they're coming from much more credible investors.
True.
The board's much more credible.
Yeah, but they've been so hesitant to tell us how it works. All they're showing is really...
I don't disagree.
Misleading videos because the technology isn't there. They're just showing you what it might be.
Mock-ups.
Yeah.
Mock-ups.
Yeah. Well, they did the whole thing with the Wired journalist, but Wired's the cheerleader of the tech industry, so I don't exactly
Actually, it was
trust.
With Kevin Kelly, who I respect. In fact, speaking of which, he's going to be our triangulation
Kevin
guest tomorrow.
Warren?
Kevin Kelly did a long piece on Magic Leap. And
he said legit?
Well, you know, there was a back and forth on it. I read a Medium piece where... I can't remember who said, well, Kevin,
he couched it very
these are
carefully.
The 10 questions you didn't ask, like, how does it work? you showed us a demo, but you didn't show us where those wires went. How, you know, there's a lot of...
Unquestioned questions.
I have huge respect for Kevin Kelly,
course,
and I totally trust him, but he may not have had the technical skills to evaluate what he was seeing. He may have been shown a dog and pony show. I don't know. Kevin will be our guest. I didn't ask. I'm kicking myself now because I did not ask him about it on triangulation, but he's going to join us. He's got a brand new book, which is fantastic. I've been talking about it a lot. It's called The Inevitable, about the next 20 years and what technologies are going to change our lives. And one of the things Kevin talked about was machine learning. He said, just as you said earlier, we're in a revolution now where machine learning will be applied just as a thin veneer to everything.
Right.
And will change everything. Much the same way the internet is being applied to your toaster.
Yeah.
And your doorbell and your sprinkler system. And it creates a huge industry and an innovative force that's very powerful. Great article by Stephen Levy a few days ago on Back Channel, which was started at Medium and now...
Condé bought it.
Condé Nast bought it,
yeah.
Which is kind of interesting. He talks about machine learning and Google's attempt to create machine learning ninjas, but way down in the article, buried a little bit, and I think maybe not given as much importance as I think it deserves, the fact that Google is now using machine learning on 90% of its search results.
Mm.
When they first launched their, what was it called, Big Brain, Google Brain, It came out of Google X. When they first launched it, it was being used kind of experimentally with search, which is, of course, the bread and butter at Google. According to Stephen, and I think if of all people, Stephen is the guy who really can look at something like
super
this
credible
and get deep into it. And I think he got somebody at Google to kind of admit something. 90% of all searches now through Google are going through machine learning. They're going through the machine learning.
Well, they've always looked for human signals. Like, so if you were to go to the number one search result, immediately hit the back key, and then go to the number two, but then not come back,
right?
They can start to infer, oh, maybe you didn't get what you needed from number one, but you did get what you needed from number two. Maybe two should be one, one should move down. And so there's going to be a lot of, you know, sort of moments like that. And then to the toaster example, you know, if you keep checking the toast for when it's ready, and then you stop checking the toast, I think we know the toast is ready, right? And so it's going to know the next time exactly how you like your toast. And then with sensors, it's going to know and be able to visually see, you know, is the toast burnt or not? So a lot of these ideas that we have where humans are coming and intervening on behalf of the machines to figure things out, it's just going to know. It's going to know when you're getting to this exit at this time, it's going to be slow. You know, it's going to be backed up. Oh, it's going to know through machine learning that there is a Warriors game and that there's going to be traffic on this route. So we're going to take you on a different route or we're going to change the speed, or the right lane is faster than the left lane, whatever it is. So it's definitely going to be the level of efficiency that's occurring now because of structured data. Like, if data wasn't structured, you can't really do this kind of stuff. So if you remember 10 years ago, we'd be on the show or talking on podcasts about, oh, structured data, we're going to have big data, things are going to be organized. You can't have a tool like Alexa when you say, Alexa, play John Mayer on Spotify.
Oh, God, you just made John Mayer play in hundreds of homes.
Only if they have Spotify. They don't have Spotify, it's going to fail on that one.
That's getting close to
Alexa, set a timer for 7 minutes. Sorry.
That's the next commercial break.
Exactly.
All right.
But the thing with that is, you know, if you have structured data, then you can start doing this natural language searching, and then machine learning can take over. And so we're on this path, right?
Mm. And we're accelerating.
It's accelerating.
It's pretty interesting.
1,000 recipes on Alexa now or something? 1,000 recipes now?
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, it's incredible. We went down to see my wife and I went down to see The Cure the other day. And her Apple Maps was just like, well, it's going to be at least 3 hours to get down there. I did the same thing in Google. So, right, if you go down that street and that street, saved us an hour.
All the signals that Waze gets are hugely valuable to Google. That's a good example, isn't it?
Well, and Tesla's cars, you know, the number of self-driving cars Google has on the road is like dozens, low dozens. Tesla now has 100,000 cars on the road that are connected.
How valuable is that?
And now it's like, oh, well, they're going to have self-driving. Self-driving is really about the edge cases, obviously. Right. Like, you know, staying in the lane. We've had lane detection. We've had adaptive cruise control. A lot of this, like, level
stuff
two
you can get
autonomy.
Away with illegally without having
We drove down
I-5
for 8 hours over the weekend, or actually last week. And I finally convinced Lisa to use the adaptive cruise control. It's amazing. It stops. It will literally stop if you're in stop-and-go traffic.
Right.
It will
stationary object? No.
Well, don't run into stationary objects.
That's a problem.
Yeah.
Not enough time to stop.
No. Yeah, that's right. You do have to keep your eye peeled. And the Tesla makes sure that you have your hands on the wheel, right? There's
every
alarm.
X seconds it shakes or something. Yeah. But then I saw somebody had put like a vice clamp on their steering wheel to
fake it out. Why would you try to fake out?
It's Darwinism in action, for goodness sake. You know, if somebody wants to do that, let them. You know, we'll pick them out the rubble later on.
Who needs a dead man's switch? It is Darwin, isn't it? Yeah.
There's a lot of Darwin going on there.
Mm. Elon's interesting, though. Speaking of data, I mean, the two times that they've been kind of in social media, big stories about Tesla's crashing.
Yeah.
Elon's released according to the data we have here, you press the accelerator.
Some guy's like, my wife's a great driver. It's kind of like a Henny Youngman bit. This guy's like, my wife, she's a great driver. There's no way she jumped the curb and hit the thing. It was obviously the car took over. And it was like, okay.
Right there. It says put on the gas.
The gas is like, the data says you missed the brake.
Doesn't that
for the
make
gas.
You nervous, though? I mean, I know you know Elon. You've got Teslas, and I'm hoping to get a Tesla.
Mine comes
next
week. Yeah.
Next week, you're getting your X?
Oh, you're getting your X next week. Okay.
So jealous. Mine in a couple of months.
Okay.
Doesn't make you nervous that Elon can see everything you do? Like,
I don't think they
down
can,
to the point of like where you're pressing the cigarette lighter. And
I don't think they
have a cigarette lighter.
I don't think
a
they
Tesla?
Keep. No, they
no,
don't.
Probably.
But I don't think they keep. I don't think they keep all that data. And I think in the privacy arrangements, they can just say like, hey, it's anonymized and we can put the data of a crash up, but all cars can do that now with their black boxes in it. So they have that. So I think it's actually net-net for society going to be pretty great that we're going to know when accidents happens, who was the actual cause of it. It might be bad for people trying to cover up stuff. Yeah. Like some guy was using the auto summon feature. The auto summon feature is specifically designed that you have to monitor the car as it pulls out of your garage.
Right.
Right? So you press the button, your garage opens, the car comes out.
And because of state laws, you can't even have it go onto the street. You have to keep it on your personal property. And
if you want to have these kind of experimental features, you have to read the manual. And like this person like did it.
Obviously, it was not watching because
if you drop the key, it stops.
Right.
Yeah.
And it, you know, and if you press any button,
it's going very, very slow.
5 miles an hour. It backed into another car. It's like, well, how did that happen? He's like, oh, it didn't stop. It's like, well, we know it didn't stop because you didn't press the stop button. You obviously were not watching. Right. Like, and so
it does deal with one of the central problems, which is humans lie all the time. So, you know, it's
these damn computers keep telling the truth. It's making me nuts.
Well, no, you've seen this with the dash cam thing, though. You know, I mean, initially dash cams were very popular in Eastern Europe because of certain laws which said if you were in an accident, then you had to wait for the police to actually come and sort it out. Now, everyone's trying to get a dash cam because it solves so many problems.
Right.
In that if somebody runs into the side of you and then does a convincing acting job with a policeman who turns up for the accident report, you can get sent to jail. Whereas you can just say, actually, just read that, would you? You know, and just watch that, and then problem solved.
Let's talk about Elon's plan to merge with Solar City.
Yeah, it's brilliant.
So Elon has participates in SpaceX, Tesla, and Solar City. His his cousins run it, right?
Lyndon and his cousins run Solar City. I think he's a chairman on that.
Okay.
I don't have any inside information on
it. So he has announced that he wants to acquire it or merge with it?
It would be an acquisition. Tesla's a much bigger company. Right? Yeah. I think one's $20 billion, one's $3
billion. But I love it because he wants to own the entire chain. He wants to go all the way from the sun
to
the road.
And the interesting thing about it is the press is just kind of sorting out this issue because it's kind of unprecedented that one person started two different companies like this, or he was an investor in
Does he have to recuse himself when the board votes?
And they did that. So they're not voting. It's up to the other shareholders to vote.
Okay.
So the management teams are not voting on it. It's up to the other ones. But there is a big vision here, which is imagine you go to a Tesla store, you buy a car, and they say, would you like solar panels and a power wall to go with it? And now you're completely off the grid.
Yeah.
Well, by the way, we kind of did that ourselves. I have the Solar City panels.
Right.
I've ordered a power wall, and of course I've ordered a Tesla. And so by the way, when you order a power wall, they ask you, and what's your Tesla VIN number? Do you own a Tesla?
Right. So now this is all going to be part of the – and then you can imagine, oh, well, what if you bought all three of those things? Because Solar City is sold to you –
it's
as
a lease.
Yeah. So now imagine
a PPA.
And again, I don't have this information, but imagine a world where you go to a showroom for a Tesla with solar panels and the power wall in it, and they say, hey, for $350 a month, would you like solar panels installed, a power wall, and a Model 3?
We'll do it all for you.
And
by the way,
all
your electricity bills will go down. And
electricity goes down. You're off the grid. Clean air.
Yeah. You know, we were driving in L.A., and it's smoggy as hell, and there's all these cars. And Lisa says, all right, that's it. I'm buying an electric car.
Yeah.
It really convinces you of the value of this.
And this is L.A. now. I mean, L.A. in the 1970s, I wasn't there, but I've seen the photos.
It was
brown. I've been to Beijing.
Well, you lived there.
Yeah. I lived there, and it was interesting to watch in the valley over 10 years, the smog was definitely going down because of not just electric cars, which were having a small impact, but also just regulation on carbon cars in California is very aggressive.
Emissions control is very aggressive.
I think China's going to be huge for this because, I mean, you go to Shanghai and you can't wear the same shirt for more than a few hours.
I won't go to China.
I was in Beijing in 2008. Yeah. It was you couldn't see.
It's a national crisis.
You couldn't see. So he says this might make the first $1 trillion company.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about the opportunity to get all of these homes in the United States off the grid and what it will do for society to have this massive amount of pressure taken off the grid, you know, we sometimes fire over into coal to get energy. If everybody started to put solar, and I think this is going to be a huge geopolitical impact, there's really a multiplier here. One, there's the environment. Two, there's cost savings. Three, there's geopolitical issues, which is, do we want to have to buy oil from Venezuela, Russia, Saudi Arabia, and other countries that maybe don't have the same view of human rights as we do.
Yeah.
And so this might create a parity where, you know, we become less dependent on them, and that's already starting to happen.
So, it also solves a
convenience.
Problem. I mean, it solves a problem in that, you know, we've been talking about the smart grid for over a decade now, and it just hasn't happened because nobody's going to invest in it. With the with Musk's plans, you don't actually need necessarily a smart grid because you can store the power yourself, you can use it yourself. It seems like a very sensible option.
Massively disruptive. When you can start storing, the two things that they dogged Tesla about and other EV companies were range anxiety, right? Mm-hmm. Solve that.
Yeah.
With the supercharger network, the larger batteries. So, you know, we solve for that major issue of range anxiety. The major objection to solar is, well, what if there's no sun? Right. What if it's a cloudy day? What if you live in a cloudy area? Well, you know what? If you have the battery back, and what about nighttime? Right. When when you need air conditioning, it's a hot summer night. Well, he solved for that too. So there are technological solutions that, if you have the wherewithal and the investment ability, which, you know, these companies take large amounts of investment, you know, can really change the world. This is something that it transcends just SolarCity and Tesla. This is something for the United States and for humanity and the world. We need to get to. So I think this could be a very powerful combination.
How important is the gigafactory to this?
It's absolutely critical that we make the batteries here and that he has a supplier that can provide the batteries. I mean, again, I don't have any inside information about it, but the number of batteries he's going to need to fulfill the, I think it's close to 400,000 orders for the Model 3. And by the way, there was this like weird rumor like, oh my God, people are just buying a bunch of tickets to like resell them it turned out that like 2% of people had bought more than one. So there's not this, you know, like people are buying up 1,000 reservations to resell them, which is also an indicator that something good's going on. But
there are also reports that he's planning a factory in China too for the downline. You know, it's, and one of the things he'd build the gigafactory as is sort of 2 years ago was that, you know, we're investing in American jobs. We're doing what Apple and the other companies aren't. And he's done it. But then, I think given the Tesla 3, you know, enormous demand for the Tesla 3, that's not really going to work.
Yeah.
You've got to go to China to actually get something knocked up quickly.
Well, and also import tax for China, there's a lot of issues around that. And I think just making some products local makes more sense than putting them on a big, huge
carbon. Well, China's a massive electric car market. They have to get into electric cars, otherwise they're all going to choke.
And you know what? If you can do it, here's my feeling on Elon and the companies. If watching him do what he's done over the last couple of years, I think he's got a couple of things up his sleeves about how to deploy this financially that could be very accretive to the bottom line and could make it a even better and a more attractive deal for a large portion of people. So if you just think about people who go into the store who are buying an EV, they've already bought into these 400,000 people who are buying it and the 100,000 people who have bought the other cars, so 500,000 people, they have money. And they buy into this vision of the future, which means the checkbox of put a power wall in, the checkbox of put solar on, I think that's like at least half of them will do it. Maybe more.
We
Who
did
knows?
It. We did it. And, and it wasn't all tied together. It was I had to make, separate calls.
Any California owner of a Tesla would buy a power
makes
wall.
Makes sense here. I mean, look at all the sun.
From Earth. We've got the sunshine. We've got the earthquakes. Yeah. It makes sense.
Pretty good for a zombie apocalypse.
Take it to New Zealand is the question.
Yeah.
New Zealand's talking about banning the sale of petrol cow.
They're not alone.
Norway did it, right?
Norway's already done it by 2025?
Yeah.
Something like that.
The chat room will
the way it's going.
Check us.
You know, it's...
That's an amazing thing to say, that we're going to ban petrol vehicles. Like they won't be.
They have.
Well, they're going to ban the sale of them. They're not going to ban the driving of them on the road.
There'll be a phase out.
What about trucks?
Truck automation's happening right now. Yeah. There's some really interesting.
You can't have an electric truck, right?
I don't see why not. I mean,
big enough power.
You're going to need to have more power. Yeah, more power packs. But that's going to be a very interesting one. Is when they get these dialed in, that you're going to have these convoys of trucks. You know, that just automatically. Yeah. You know, go in a convoy on the road. It's going to be pretty interesting. What's interesting also is I think Tesla's on a course to maybe you'll be able to buy the car based on how many miles you use, and it will automatically come to you. So that's that. You know, have your car come out of the driveway. There's no reason at some point you couldn't click that button and have a car come to you from a central garage.
No, that's
or you take the garage for the
Elon
day.
Has said across the country.
Or across the country. So imagine that vision where you don't own a car. You just, in the Tesla app, say, I need a car for, you buy 1,000 miles a year from Tesla.
Yeah.
For $1 a mile. And you're done.
It also means if this actually gets in and we can get these kind of cars working on the on U.S. roads or roads worldwide, coming back to Uber, it makes them an instant cash cow. Because you can get rid of all that pesky driver business and actually just focus on the software that you've got running the entire thing.
Yeah. I put that at over. I put the over-under on the majority of miles in a city being driven autonomously at 12 years.
That seems fair.
I don't know if you take the over or the under on that, Ian.
Yeah.
The majority of miles in a major U.S. city being autonomous.
Okay.
Greater than 12?
Technically, it will be possible in under 12, without a doubt.
Okay.
It's possible.
Regulations.
Regulation, that's going to be absolute key. Because
regulation and acceptance.
Regulation, but, I mean,
you're talking about taking, this comes back to what we were saying earlier, if that comes through, you're talking about taking truck drivers, bus drivers, taxi drivers, delivery drivers, all off the road.
Stay home.
Their jobs are gone.
Yeah, stay home.
You know,
by the way, 1.5% of the entire American population is employed as drivers.
Yeah.
That's a significant number of people.
I wonder, in the chat room, would you take under 12 or over 12
over.
For the majority of miles?
You can take over or under.
Majority of miles in a city being autonomous.
Being legally autonomous, I'm going to go over than that.
Over
politicians
12.
Are going to lose their
I get a lot of overs.
Charm says over.
The drive over that.
So then if we set it, one person says under. If we set it at 15... Would you say over 15 or under 15 for the majority of us? Because this is how the sports lines are set, and that's where...
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Perry Mitchell.
This week in handicapping.
It's going to come. It all depends on whether or not the politicians have the balls to pass the legislation.
Dr. Mom's echo alarm has been going off
and
for
also
a few minutes,
takes
so
liability.
I think I better take a break right now.
Mm. Okay.
Sorry about that, Dr. Mom. Mm. Alexa, stop. See if that helps. Our show today brought to you by Trunk Club. Do you know about Trunk Club? Trunk Club is really cool. And I think you need Trunk Club because...
Subscription service?
No, it's not, actually. I just want to say, you wear the same vest every time I see you.
I do. It's uniform.
It's your uniform.
A uniform.
Now, maybe you're such a big shot, doesn't matter what you wear.
Yes.
But some of us, we want to dress for success. We're dressed for the job we want.
Yes.
Not the job we got. Trunk Club is cool. Now, you said subscription, and I think that's the first thing people assume. Oh, I'm going to get a box every month. No. This is really cool, and there is no cost to you up front. Here's how it works. With Trunk Club, you go to trunkclub.com/twit and you sign up. This is free. And you will never go into a store to do your shopping. You're going to get your very own personal stylist for free. She will call you. You will talk. And I had a nice conversation. I'm not telling you her name because I don't want to steal her. And I told her I'm a little portly. A lot portly. I told her I was blunt. I was honest.
Candid.
Candid.
If you will.
And she was not mean. She did not laugh.
No judgments.
When I said stocky, she said, okay. And I got some ideas. They put them up on a website. I said, yay or nay. And then they sent me the trunk. Wow. Full of really nice premium clothes. She picked them all. It's better than Garanimals, but they all went together in nice shoes. Ties, swim trunks, beautiful swim trunks. I got some nice swim trunks, short sleeve button downs, lightweight blazers. Then you still have paid nothing, by the way, at this point. Then you pick what you want and you send the trunk back with everything you don't want. And then and only then do you pay just for the clothes you keep. If you keep nothing, you pay nothing, zero. And it doesn't mean you're going to get another box next month. It is not a subscription. This is from Nordstrom. So you know you're getting really high quality clothing. Really great stylists. They have the highest standards in customer service. If you live in Dallas or New York or L.A. or Chicago or D.C., they have Trunk Club clubhouses, and your stylist is there. You can work with them and talk to them and meet them in person and even, you know, try on clothes there. The nice thing is when your trunk arrives, you have 10 days to try on the clothes, to keep what you want, send back what you don't. It's not a subscription service. Shipping is always free. You only pay for the clothes you keep. That's it.
Super easy.
Oh,
easy peasy.
So great. And I'm not a big shopper. They have it for men and women. I am not a big shopper. I don't want to go in a store.
You don't have to pay to send it back, though.
So no, everything's free.
Everything's free.
If you send it all back,
so there's
you
no
pay
risk.
Nothing.
There's no risk.
Make a statement at the next big event on your calendar. Don't wear a puffy vest. Get a look.
Ow, close in, Leo, please.
No. I love your puffy vest. That's you. It's you. It's you. Keep it on. That's it reminds me of that thing they sell for dogs so that they can handle thunderstorms. It keeps them, it swaddles them. You're swaddled in your puffy vest.
I'm just going to move slightly away from the
Trunk Club. My only hope.
Trunk Club. Get started today at trunkclub.com/twit. Trunkclub.com/twit. They are really,
help me,
really
Trunk
awesome.
Club.
And I have a lot of Trunk Club clothes. I've been very, very, very happy. They call that the Thunder Shirt. The dog.
What's nice about it is going, some people like to go shopping. Oh, and good. Most folks hate it.
Yeah.
And I think guys particularly, I mean,
I beg to differ.
Yeah.
Everybody loves to shop. It's just what they're shopping for. So most guys do not like to shop. I do know guys that love to shop for clothes. Most guys, shopping for clothes, not high on their list. Take me to a hardware store or a pen shop or a watch shop.
That's true.
We love, there's certain things we love to
Got
shop
it.
For.
Clothes are not one of them.
In my case, it ain't clothes.
No, when it comes to the Christmas shopping, I map out what I need to get everyone, where the stores are, the shortest route between them, and get it just done in one fair.
That's what we need at Trunk Club for Christmas.
That'd be great.
Oh, my God, that'd be great. Mm. You talk to a stylist. She says, who's your list? This is a personal assistant is what it is.
Yeah.
So I got Sam Lesson. Love Sam. Mm. Nice guy.
Smart.
Started drop.io, then went to Facebook, did the timeline for Facebook. He's created a personal assistant called Finn. $150 a month. And then
Finn as in Finnish.
Finn as in, I don't know, maybe. And then $35 if it's a tough job, up to, like, you pay an hourly rate. Because I think there's people on the other end.
Yeah.
iPhone only. I'm thinking I might cancel. I never
use
it.
Yeah. Oh, you never use it.
Well,
what kind of stuff do you ask them?
You could do all sorts of things. I mean, like, weird things. Like, can you find out for me how many people under 15 voted for Brexit?
Yeah.
You know that the voting age in Scotland is 16?
Yeah, I know.
What is that all about?
Well, it was done originally for the Scottish independence vote because they figured the young people would vote more for independence.
Okay. But see, I learned that from Finn. I said, what's the voting age in Scotland? And Finn, now if it's hard, they'll charge you extra. So I don't like this because I don't know how much it's going to...
We have Google for this? You know, I mean, call me Mr. Pickett.
But they'll do things like, can you ask my friend Jason if he's available for lunch on Thursday? And somebody will call you.
Mm.
It's not all automated.
There's another company called Operator doing something similar where
Facebook similar, right?
The idea is people like the chat interface, and there's a whole caliber of companies which are called the mom companies for millennials. And the concept is whatever your mom did for you, mom drove you to your appointment. Mom got your clothes.
How much would you pay?
Mom got you your food.
Yeah.
Not having to have a lease. All these things that like take work and detail. Yeah. If you can have a millennial never grow up and have to get a car lease or sign a lease for a home, they can go to WeWork, and WeWork now has apartments, and you just show up at WeWork, give them your credit card, you have an apartment.
In the old days, just get a wife.
Yeah,
women. Damn them! They got wised up. God,
you like living dangerously?
They wised up.
It's a little sexy.
No, I'm not kidding. I mean, that's what happened. Is a guy got a wife, and then she did all that work.
Yeah.
She took over for mom.
No, I know.
They wised up and they said, "I'm not doing that. What are you crazy? I need a mom."
You should see the punch list my wife gives me. It's the opposite. She's like, here's the things you're doing this
weekend.
Honeydews.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay.
But it's sexist, right? Because I bet you're the one that does the manly things, like, you know, to hangs up things on the
wall. There's an interesting thing. You know, when you look at the assistants that were made, Alexa.
It's all women.
It's all women. Siri. And so there is a little something there where I think we have to think as a society what we're going to these assistants.
I think one of the reasons, based on the people I've talked
Mommy
to, that they went
Mom.
For...
Mommy?
One of the reasons they went for female voices is because the people psychologically react better to female voices than they do to male voices.
That the heads-up displays in fighter jets, the voice that tells you, pull up, pull up, pull up if you're in a dive because you've passed out, is always a female voice for that exact reason, that men... particularly, but I think anybody will respond better to a female voice.
That's interesting, human factors.
Yeah. You see, I mean, when it comes to sort of, I was talking about this with a friend because, you know, the turn-by-turn directions on your phone, it's always a woman's voice. And
not
she always
mine.
Gets
I have Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, me too.
Really?
Yeah.
I want Barry
turn
White
left
doing mine.
Now.
For a while, I had GLaDOS.
Has it in the road. Look out. Look out.
No, that was his.
Yeah. And then they had C-3PO. And
well, there used to be a John Cleese Easter egg in one of them where if you spent like 15 minutes going against advice, John Cleese would come on and go, "Are you even listening to me?" You know?
I want that.
Yeah. You know. Bloody hell. There's a tremendous celebrity market in celebrities doing your...
Tom used to do that. They'd have celebrity voices.
Yeah.
But then nobody uses Tom.
Now, Waze uses it like every couple of months.
Waze does it promotionally.
It's promotionally.
You can buy C-3PO when Star Wars came out.
It was free. It's Terminator, C-3PO. Right. They were all free to promote the movies, right?
Okay.
Yeah.
I had on my TomTom, I had GLaDOS from Portal. She's the evil computer.
Mm.
This was a very bad idea because every time you were supposed to turn right, she would tell you to turn left.
Yeah.
I kid you not. This was dangerous.
Now drive off the pier.
Exactly. But it was hysterical.
Human scum.
I love the XKCD. I love the XKCD idea of the warmer, colder navigation thing. You're driving, and I was like, colder, colder. All right, turn left.
Oh, that's good.
Warmer, warmer.
That's the way to find it. All right, Apple. Now, this is rumor, and I hate to do rumors, except we are getting closer to the time that they're going to have to manufacture. We may even be at that time. They're going to start manufacturing the next generation iPhone. They will typically announce in September for an October release.
Yeah.
If you're going to make 100 million of them by the end of the year, you better start now.
Better be good.
Well,
I'm just on a corporate basis. There's people are not upgrading their phones. They got to come up with something transformative more than emojis.
Well, here's more than dumping the headphone jack. Yeah.
Well, that's what's interesting.
Oh, okay, so infuriating.
We've seen leaks because, you know, once you start making these things, you can keep a tight lid in Cupertino, but once it gets to China, you know, all bets are off.
And you don't have Steve Jobs policing it anymore.
Mm.
That's the other thing. I think that it is
the fear of Steve was like a lot of people are like, I'm not printing that rumor and not getting invited to WWCC.
You get your door kicked down that way if you cross Steve. It's just
really that'll happen. You won't get invited.
They disinvited.
Oh, to WWE? Are you kidding?
Oh yeah, you've been disinvited.
Oh, I haven't been invited for years.
I was going to say we've been on
six
a blacklist
years.
For that. For
I've been
about,
on the blacklist for 6 years.
We beat you by about
really?
Four, but yeah.
Register's been on the list.
Oh, we've been completely blacklisted.
Even
by Apple,
Gizmodo got invited back. They still wow.
I got Engadget invited back.
I guess
after I Tenegate.
Yeah, but it was Gizmodo that bought the phone.
Well, that's that was bad. But I had to email Steve because the Engadget guys got banned because we did AntennaGate. We didn't come up with the name AntennaGate. One of the commenters did, but we made a phone headline like AntennaGate, iPhone 4 issue, and Steve was so upset by this.
This seems so wrong to me.
Well,
he was
you know,
so
Steve.
Thin-skinned.
Steve,
well, not even thin-skinned. It's you're saying this not to that journal. You're not just saying it to Engadget. You're saying it to their readers. You're saying it to your potential customers. You're not invited,
right?
And I feel like that is it's the same thing as Mr. Trump saying to the Washington Post, you can't have reporters at my events anymore.
It's anti-American.
It feels wrong to me. Sometimes.
Anti-free press, anti-American, for sure.
It's an increasingly common tactic, though.
Beltway journalism works, right?
Well, not Beltway, Silicon Valley journalism as well.
It's
if
the
you
same
say
thing.
The wrong, you say, you
Silicon
say
Valley
the wrong thing about the wrong company, then you will get your
invite. So it's not just
that.
Well, forget about not getting access. How about not getting people to come give a keynote at your conference and then other people getting them for your keynote? So, like, if you think about, you know, the D conference or Recode.
Well, look at Recode. Everybody goes to Recode.
Well, it's very clubby. I'm friends
with
Walt.
Is that because Walt will never say anything bad?
No, Walt will
say bad things.
Here's the thing.
Kara will say bad things. No.
There's two ways to maintain.
It's about some people.
There's the way in which you go about it. Like, you can't be super sharp. You have to be there's a way.
Gentle criticism.
Yeah, there's a way
to frame
Walt
the criticism. Which Walt is very good at that, because Walt's very positive at Apple, but everybody points out, he says, well, no. I don't have any special treatment from Apple. I'll say negative things. Look, I didn't like the trackpad on the mouse.
Yeah.
I thought it was not as good as it could be.
This is a guy who managed to do an entire iOS 6 review and never once mentioned the fact that the Maps app was absolutely useless.
Yeah. So you have to do it. You have to
maintaining
do it.
Access is important.
This is why I take it as a
this
great
is why,
point of pride
no, I'm saying
that
to,
I get invited
in people's
to
minds.
Nothing.
Oh,
I'm
yeah,
saying
yeah,
to
no,
me.
No.
But here's the thing. If you look at Theranos, putting this aside, you know, it took a Wall Street Journal writer in Brooklyn, John Carreyrou, who should have gotten a Pulitzer for this, and I hope they correct that, because it's just tremendous journalism. It couldn't happen here because the other thing
Silicon
is...
Silicon Valley access.
If you look at even... And you know, listen, I'm here and I'm massively conflicted as an angel investor. People know my conflict so they can take my
You're
words
very honest
with,
about them, yeah.
Yeah, I'm upfront with it. But there's other people, and I recently had this on my podcast where I brought up some conflict somebody had, and it was like, oh my God, you were being a bully to this other journalist. And I was like, well, here's the thing. You have to state what your conflicts are right up front. If your spouse works at Google or Facebook
or
Twitter,
as Kara Swisher's did.
Or Kara Swisher's did, or Jessica Lessons does, you know, like, it's just one of those complications that we have to be more honest about.
Yeah.
And if you live here, the problem with it is if you live here, your chances of winding up married to a tech person or dating a tech person is like 98%. If you live in New York and you work for the New York Times, your chances of marrying a Wall Street person is 6%, right? So we just have this inherent conflict. Then if you marry a person who works for a tech company, or the person you're married to as a journalist winds up going to work for a tech company, which could also happen, then all of a sudden your net worth could be based upon that. So it's just very problematic here. I don't think you have a sharp... Since like Upside and Red Herring and those kind of like...
Oh, yeah. Those were the days.
Those were like very edgy.
Tony Perkins, Red Herring.
You know,
Herring.
He was a big...
Loved
Tony
that.
Was like a jerk, like, and it was like his redeeming quality.
He was a jerk, and that was good.
It was at the time, and then he became
nice
a sellout. But he was like, it was kind of jerky to people in a good way.
Yeah.
That's like me. I'm jerky to people.
You're candid, I think. you're a unique snowflake.
You know, the way I do this...
With sharp edges.
I don't even talk to them. I don't want to talk to anybody. I don't want to talk to PR people. And admittedly, I don't get as much kind of inside.
But look at your audience. But look at your audience.
There's a real value to – it's too small for them to care.
No, the opposite. Your audience – please, they care. Their audience – your audience is so loyal and so large because people know you're not in the pocket.
Exactly.
That is clear to everybody.
I hope that's true. And that's one of the – that was actually one of the signature goals in my career.
Yeah, mission accomplished.
No, I mean...
I did that by being a dick as much as possible.
You know, we did it...
being candid. You know, you got to be candid. You got to. Yes. People have to build credibility. And that's why people look at, like, TechCrunch as kind of a joke or, you know, they don't look at Walt as a joke or Kara as a joke, but there is a sense that...
It does. Well,
they
Pando
have to maintain
Daily,
those...
The companies that take investment money...
Yeah, Pando lost all credibility, yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, to be honest, TechCrunch is the same. If you're writing about story about companies... That you are yourself investing.
Haven't
in.
They I transcended see, that though? Now I mean, their own by.
Well, they might think they have.
They're irrelevant.
But, yeah.
It's still in the.
It's chilling
in the water. Huh?
Yeah, it's just, they've. When here's the thing: when Mike was there, he was a jerky publisher who would say anything. But there was also this undertone of like
he was also investing.
They were
anything.
Also invested in the pocket of things, so it all comes out in the end.
Yeah.
You know, journalism is at a crossroads right now because you have the conflict of interests. Right? CNN getting owned by a big media conglomerate, et cetera. Jeff Bezos owning Amazon. You have this massive conflicted industry.
Washington Post, yeah.
At the Washington Post. And then at the same time, the business model has imploded, so there's no room to pay for investigative journalists anymore. Their ranks have been totally slaughtered.
Yeah.
And we really need to think about freedom of the press. And obviously the Peter Thiel, Gawker thing, no big winner there. It was a lot of bad actors, actually.
Yes, that's the problem.
Is a problem. We really need as a society... to figure out where is the independent journalist core that is sharp and aggressive and protects society and gets us to the truth, because the current press corps are largely failing at that.
Oh, quite. I agree totally. I mean, seriously, when we get companies saying, and we've had this with some of the biggest companies in the media, say, we are no longer going to cooperate with you, you know, because of that particular story that you did. Well, fine. You know, I mean, this is what the readers don't pay us to write what you would like us to write. The readers pay us what they want to.
It seems like a very old-fashioned.
Hey, come on. I mean, conception. Apple.
But this has always been a problem with trade press, going back to hi-fis and cars, which is, to some degree, it was always press release journalism. And it was an understood. If you read Car and Driver, you don't read it for their hard-hitting analysis of whether a car is good. It's really a fanzine for the industry. Mm. And I think a lot of tech journalism.
Far too much of it.
But it's not a bad thing. Well, okay, I'll give you a great example.
It's a bad thing.
Back in the 90s, it was a good thing because people were so scared about technology. Yeah. They were so worried about it.
We needed to cheerlead a little bit.
We needed cheerleaders.
Yeah.
But it's mainstream now.
No longer
the geeks.
We need adversarial.
People holding critical, you know, holding these people's feet to the fire.
Yeah. Well, here's a really good example, which is this Apple headphone jack. Actually, we should take a break and then we'll come back.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Because, you know, Neelai Patel wrote a great takedown. By the way, he was the one who also said, here's five questions Kevin Kelly ought to have asked when he visited Magic Leap. That was Neelai also. Neelai, I have to say, Neelai, of all of the all the guys out there, and of course, he worked for you at Engadget, right?
Yep.
is willing to stick his neck out and say nasty-ass things. And in this case, he says what Apple's doing or potentially doing with the headphone jack is criminal almost. It's anti-user.
Was a beautifully sharp article.
And then, wonderful
article.
I hate
to push the competition, but that was a well worth the
and
read.
And then you see John Gruber, who writes Daring Fireball, which is probably the one of the premier Apple blogs, saying, well, you know, but Apple... they're brilliant this way. They discontinued the floppy drive, and that was a good thing. Anyway, we'll talk about that.
Yeah, I could rant for quite some time on that one.
This was a good week. We had a lot of fun. I wasn't here. That's part of the reason. And I'm as interested as you might be in this little mini video we've made of some of the highlights from this week's episode. Take a look.
Previously on Twit.
Now, how do I know you're doing it together? Because your green screen skills are so top-notch.
Well, you will notice that we don't actually cross over here. We have been really working on some of the keying, so this is the hardest part right there, is to that's a one key over top of the other one.
Security Now.
You know what I can trust, Steve? I can trust my home security cameras.
The title of this article on Reddit was, I bought and returned a set of Wi-Fi connected home security cameras. Forgot to delete my account, and I can now watch the new owner. You just plug them in, and they don't ask any questions. Everything just works. Oh.
This week in Google.
This two-factor change that Google made, is this an improvement? Does this make it easier? What do you think, Gene?
Definitely. This change is, instead of having to like look at a code, get an SMS, you get a push notification with a button. Yes, authenticate me, or no.
I think I did something I should not have done, you guys.
Uh-oh.
I was like, I'm gonna go ahead and do this two-factor thing. The number I gave it was my Google Voice number.
Oh, no.
My Google Voice number is on the other side of the authentication.
Oh, Jason.
I think I'm screwed, you guys.
Twit.
I think you might be.
Yes, Twit.
Jason's been locked out of the office because two-factor won't let him back in.
That was genius.
Thanks to Jason Howell for taking over Twig for me, and for Father Robert Ballasier for taking over Security Now, and of course Andy and Alex and Renee for doing Mac Break Weekly. But I am back, and we will go back to the... I'm sorry. I'll be back for the shows next week. Hey, Jason Howell is here from Tech News Today. What's coming up this week, Jason?
Thanks, Leo. Here is a look at a few things we're going to be keeping an eye on in the week ahead. First, on Monday, June 27th, Snapchat launches its real-life digital publication. One new post every weekday on technology topics that are going to appeal to its users. Also, on Wednesday, June 29th, AMD is scheduled to release its price-conscious entry into powering desktop VR, the Radeon RX 480 GPU. That'll be priced at around $200. On June 30th, Apple's going to be pulling the plug on its iAd app network, with the associated APIs scheduled to be deprecated. This was initially announced back in January, and developers are encouraged to remove the deprecated iAd framework classes from their apps by then, as no more ads are going to be served. I promise there will be even more tech news all week, but I'm going to be out on vacation, so you can find Megan Maroney bringing the tech news every Monday through Friday on Tech News Today. That's a look at the week ahead. Back to you, Leo.
Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Pacific. Thank you, Jason. 7 p.m. Eastern Time.
I should be there on Thursday.
Yep. UTC. And you're a regular on that show.
Yeah, I'll be there on Thursday. Love it when you're on. This Thursday. Always good fun. Yeah. Megan's a great lass, yeah. And Jason is spot on.
A great lass? Is that what you said?
Yeah. Sorry, you're mocking my
conscience. A lassie? Is she a lassie?
Well,
lassie,
hey, everybody, while Leo logs into his Audible.
I am logging. How did you know I was doing
that? I see you. Audible has an amazing service. It's the Platinum service. You get 20 credits a year.
Jason wants to do this.
I've done it for 5 years. And currently, my pick of the week is Sapiens, A Brief History of Mankind.
Oh, this sounds good.
Yuval Noah Harari.
I am in the market.
It is 15 hours of incredible, incredible history of humans. And did you know that there were many humans on the planet concurrently, different species of humans.
Yeah. The Neanderthal now is turning out not to be the failure that we all thought, but in fact a very robust species.
This book is blowing my mind currently.
Oh, I can't wait.
Over 4,600 ratings, and that's how you pick a book on Audible. You look at those ratings, 4.6 stars, so a large number of ratings with a very high rating. And what I do when you get that great Platinum edition of
you get two books a month.
You get tons of books, and what you do is you're opportunistic. You go right into a category where you feel like you need to beef up. Like for me, it was science and technology, and you just pick whatever five of the top 10 science books you think will make you smart.
Brilliant.
And that's how I do it. I just look at the rankings, you browse Audible, you look at the top rankings, and then you just buy the books that have the highest rankings and that have the most reviews, and you will become smarter.
That is, what a great tip.
And all your books are refundable. If you don't like a book, it's a money-back guarantee.
Oh, is that true? I didn't know that.
That is true.
You know why? Because I've never turned in a book.
Exactly. But no fear.
This is the Kevin Kelly book we were talking about.
He's
He's going to be on Monday on Triangulation.
A bestseller as well.
It's really, really good. Lots of stars on that. Here's the deal. Go to audible.com/twit2. You're going to sign up for the Platinum account, as Jason was saying. That's two books a month. Hmm. You also get the Daily Digest of the New York Times, the Wall Street Journal. Pay nothing for the first 30 days. Cancel in that time. You're gone. You're done. You're free. But you do get to keep the books. So you're going to get those two books for free no matter what happens. I don't think you're going to cancel. Jason, you said 5 years. I've been an Audible member since 2000, 16 years
ago. Wow. Back when they were not part of Amazon. They were just a little independent company, but they've gotten so good.
Yeah. I had the what was it? They called it the Auto or something. It was before anybody had iPhones or iPods.
Yeah, there was a device.
It had its own device.
Plug in your device.
It on my Diamond Rio, and I had it listened on Audible.
I'll tell you, they've really worked on one of the things they've done is they've really worked on the app. So it used to be that you had to like podcast and sync your phone.
No, it's wonderful.
It'll download, even if you're on your data plan, you know, it will download just enough for you to get started with a book. So you could log in through the web app. And so I keep myself logged in Chrome. So I will go in through the Chrome app, buy the book, then I double click and go over to my app and I stream it, I download it, and I just buy books by the half dozen.
Well, the best, most economical way, of course, with an Audible subscription, audible.com/twit2 to get yours. This is nice, too. They've added the capability, and this is great if you're on a Chromebook or any device that doesn't have an Audible app, which is very few, because there's iOS, Android, Windows Phone, Windows 10. But you can stream from the website.
Sure.
So you can listen. I'm listening to this wonderful book.
Which one?
My Life in France by Julia Child.
Oh, wow.
Oh, it's so
friends
wonderful.
Friends of mine are actually going to France on Airbnb.
That's why we're listening.
Place.
What? You can do
you
that?
Get Airbnb you can Airbnb the place. You can
Airbnb. They're going to France specifically just to hire out Julia Child's kitchen and cook foods in it.
You can get Julia Child's old house.
Warm bunk and peered out of the
This is so much fun. And that's why we're listening to it. Lisa and I listen together. This is another thing. It's a fun thing for couples to do.
Yep.
We listen together. You can play it back on
do
your
you
Amazon
know about
Echo.
The sleep timer?
Yeah.
That's a brilliant thing is you can sleep time it in the app so you can say, I want to listen. So I've been listening to Sapiens and, you know, I have sometimes.
I'm getting that, by the way.
I have a hard time going to bed sometimes. So I put it on 20 minutes.
Yep.
And then if I'm not asleep, I'll just go another 20 minutes. But if I do fall asleep, I know I might have missed the last 5 minutes, so I just rewind a little bit.
The whole.
And I put myself to bed sometimes with a book.
Now, by the way, it looks like they have the unabridged, but it looks like they might also have the abridged version. Now, I'm not a big this is like a analysis and review. So this this is like a companion version.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, they have the great courses now.
I have
those.
Two of those right now. I'm listening to Building a Better Vocabulary.
Oh, really?
Which, you know, I don't think I have a weak vocabulary.
A pusillanimous of you.
Well,
is it making you more loquacious? Or,
I think the quotidian.
Let's not start a Donnybrook here, gentlemen. over this.
This looks good. Oh, that's great.
And it's really good. The guy is. This guy,
18
Kevin
hours.
Flanagan.
That's a lot of vocabulary.
Well, you know what? You go on a nice hike. I like to do my hikes, and I put it on for a hike, and. It's just nice
to
fill in.
You know what I love is etymologies.
In. Well, that's
does
what he does.
That?
He goes right into etymology.
How the words developed and we
I love
yeah,
that.
That's what it
that's
is.
That's excellent.
I just bought the OED as well. Because you can look at the etymologies, the first use of a word. It's really fun.
Bill Bryson's done some great books on the roots of language for that sort of thing.
Yeah.
By the way, Bill Bryson, another great Audible. A Walk in the Woods, which is his story of the walking the Appalachian Trail, is so great. Made in America. Yeah.
The Lost Continent was the first one of his I read, and it still has one of the finest opening lines of a 20th century book.
What was it?
I was born in Des Moines, Iowa. Somebody had to be.
Very funny writer. Is this the one you were talking about where he's talking about language, the mother tongue?
Mother tongue. Very good read. Right. Very good.
So we've just given you about 30 books you're going to want on Audible. You get two free. Go to audible.com/twit2, and God God save you, heaven help you, because I don't know how you're going to choose. But the nice thing is another two books next month, right?
I'm going to read my own book.
Are you writing a book?
Just sold it.
What?
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, I sold my book.
Dude.
It's a big deal, yeah.
What is
Harper Business.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, big.
That's nice. Did you get Gary Vaynerchuk money?
More.
Oh,
I think I got. Burn. I definitely got more on my first book than he did.
Because he got like a 12 book deal.
Yeah, no,
so
this is
doesn't count.
This is
really don't do 12 at a time.
No, one. I'm only going to do one book. One book in this lifetime.
What's it
going to
be called?
I can't say the name, but it's going to be about angel investing and how wealth is created in the 21st century.
Oh, that's okay. Going to be must.
I wrote the first 4 or 5 chapters, and the woman
Harper
said,
"Harper Business is very good."
It was I basically had an auction for it.
Smart. See?
So they did an auction,
this is why we're sitting here. He's driving a Tesla.
Well,
hey, and you drive a Tesla as well.
You know what?
I'm just trying to chum up with
you. No. I'm really quite happy with my Prius. I'll just sit here and hurt that cat.
The best moment was they said, "We Harper Business. We have Jim Collins, Peter Drucker,
good to great,
and we need Jason Calacanis." And
wow.
I said, "Wow, that is the biggest line of BS I've ever heard."
That is a trio.
I was like, "Those guys are giants. I'm not going to hold a candle, but I'm pretty excited about it."
It's going to be.
I feel like if you're going to write a book, it has to be something you're an absolute expert on. You know better than anybody.
It shouldn't be hard work.
It should be easy. And you know what? Writing about angel investing, I'm just telling my story of how I invested in these companies and all the money I lost and the ones that were hits and the ones that are in between.
That was my problem. I've written many books, and I didn't know anything about what I was writing.
You should write a book on broadcasting. You should write a book on broadcasting.
I don't know anything about that either. I it's too much work for too little money, but I don't get the,
you know. A book on broadcasting would be amazing.
What?
If you just did a book on broadcasting, here's what I've learned in 25 years for people
how
who want to be broadcasting.
25 years, December, 30, 40 years.
For my 40 years in broadcasting, how to break into broadcasting.
I'm 40 years in broadcasting.
Back in the day.
If you want to be a great broadcaster, you got to do the crank.
It's all about the tape recorder.
And make sure the antenna's pointed in the right direction. Speak right up on the microphone.
The first microphone I ever used was a vintage RCA ribbon mic hanging from the ceiling.
Oh, my word.
And I'll show
you.
That's
hilarious.
Oh, my God. It looked just like this. This is it. It was a beautiful
77DX. And did they have, like, the fake shoes on the desk where they were like, and Leo came in. Clank, 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 and the door cranked.
Hi, I'm Leo, and I'm here to tell you about, this was it, the RCA 77DX.
Who's at the door?
Great mic. Oh, you could buy it on eBay. Wait a minute.
How to break into
broadcasting.
I'll
be back with you guys in a minute.
Yeah. How to break into broadcasting.
$2,000?
That's unbelievable.
So these ribbon mics are very fragile because it's a carbon ribbon inside the microphone. They break easily. But I would love to have one.
My brother-in-law used to be still is one of the archivists at Abbey Road, and they have
what?
Yeah, they have
what?
They have serious issues now because they have media which they can't. You know, they've got like sort of.
If they play it back, it'll shred.
They've got the heads on the tape player to play the media back are so old and no longer made, they don't have enough head time to actually play the recordings back and digitize them. So now they're going to have to go to people and get them to custom
build
these heads
and make a new head.
Yeah. And it's an enormous problem.
But are these Beatles recordings?
There's a lot of Beatles recordings, but everyone has recorded at Abbey Road.
Well, of course, but just the Beatles recordings alone. There's stuff that we haven't heard. Is that what you're saying?
There's stuff which, actually, to be honest, you probably shouldn't hear because it's like you know, it's not their best stuff, but it is new stuff, and people will buy it because it's the Beatles, and you know, you do. But you know, there's enormous. We are reaching. Well, we're kind of going through a digital dark age at the moment where all the stuff that was created
you're absolutely right.
Up until the sort of 80s and early 90s, we're going to lose.
We're going to lose it.
Yeah.
I was on a campaign for some years to talk. I was talking to many of the broadcasters I knew who had great interviews with, you know, Jimi Hendrix and others. Mm-hmm. There's a guy in Toronto who's interviewed everybody. It's on reel-to-reel tapes in his garage.
Oh.
And I said, it's John Donaby. I said, John, you've got to let me help you.
Yeah.
We will get these tapes digitized because in a year or two, they're going to fall apart and that's it.
Yeah.
They did it for the movie industry.
And I will help you put this online. You know,
Isn't there a case of that with the first televised Super Bowl where somebody actually
gone.
Recorded
it? They don't have it.
They recorded it.
There's one guy who has a copy.
There's one guy
who
has it. Tape.
And they won't buy it from him.
Yeah. He's so tied up in legal problems that no one can ever see it.
Yeah.
I saw a clip of it. It's awful.
It's VHS.
It's just guys throwing a ball around and kicking it occasionally.
Terrible. You know? Terrible. These guys are fumbling the ball constantly.
Yeah. Well, first off, it shouldn't be called football, but that's a story for later.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, with this headphone thing, are they simply removing the jack?
We don't know.
Let's say it's all
rumor at this point.
Okay, but if they are removing it.
Yeah.
Let's just assume that's true.
It would be a lightning port. By the way, right. There's precedent for this. Motorola's new Moto Z, or Z, as your people say.
You know, the guys that invented the language.
Okay,
yes.
Whatever. is a Type-C connector with no headphone jack. Mm-hmm. And both Type-C and Lightning are data connectors as well charging ports. So you can get digital audio out. You would have to have a DAC, a digital... Mm-hmm. Digital to analog converter, either in a dongle or built into headphones that would plug into the Lightning port. Beats does make Lightning port headphones. Philips also makes Lightning port headphones. And the question is, and it's unknown whether Apple would bundle a dongle.
Are you kidding? They're going to make people pay through the
nose.
They're
going to make you pay $39
for a dongle.
So, Nilay Patel, and again, we should say this is a rumor, although getting more credible as we get closer to the launch date. And I love Nilay for saying this, taking the headphone jack off phones is user hostile and stupid. Mm. Have some dignity.
Well, I mean, is there motivation because they bought Beats to make a royalty every time somebody makes headphones for?
Unknown.
Apple? Because that would be really like, you don't make, that would show that Apple is so desperate to make more money that they have to like close the ecosystem anymore. What is the upside to not having it is what I'm trying
to
figure out.
That's the rub, yeah.
Is the upside that
well, you know they'll cost? Have some statement. You know, Johnny Ive will come on and said, after really thinking about the purpose of a headphone jack, we've decided the best way to do it is to not do it at all. What we've done is we've made the invisible headphone jack you've always wanted.
Now you don't have to worry about mistaking your headphone jack for your Lightning connector.
Right.
I can just say these English accents are hilarious.
I know, they're bad. I know, I'm sorry. It's not to make it thinner. You could argue that there'd be more room in the case a little bit for battery.
Maybe a millimeter or two.
Simplifies it. And, of course, Apple's always been about fewer buttons, fewer controls, fewer jacks. They made the MacBook with one Type-C connector.
Yeah, and hasn't that paid bonuses for users?
No, are they
going
to go to the new MacBook uses a C, USB-C?
Yeah.
Now, does that mean the iPhone is going to move to a USB-C?
No, Apple has said we will make it with a Lightning port. In fact, at this point, if they do this, now they're really committed to the
Lightning port for many more years.
Ugh. Because what the last thing you're going to do is next year make it a Type-C connector and say, oh, and by the way, that perfect headphone you just bought doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
But we've got a dongle. For the dongle.
I'm sorry.
It's a double dongle.
With a way fill landfills.
This is a
with
classic
iPhone
case of the Cupertino idiot tax. There are enough Apple sheep out there who will buy whatever they get because they're told it's cool and, this is great. Look, I can save a whole millimeter of my phone. It only cost me $30.
Apple will undoubtedly have a reason. Now, one thing Nilay brings up is digital rights management because, of course, an headphone port is an analog hole, right? And I don't think this is – I can't imagine this is a problem for anybody in the industry. But you could, of course, take copy-protected music and record it. But nobody's doing that because most music is no longer copy-protected. Mm. So I don't think that could be the reason. It may have a significant impact, I don't know, podcasters?
I mean, there is no positive use case for why people should do this other than Apple is telling them that they should
Let's go check in with John Gruber, famous Apple blogger.
When you plug in, just on a technical basis, if I plug in my power cable, I'm charging my phone, and I want to listen to audio.
Oh, no, sorry.
Because, wait, that's a major use case for me. I'm plugged, my phone's plugged in, and I'm listening.
You have it on a dock, and you listen.
Yeah, all
the time. Well, when they put it on the bottom, they kind of screwed that up anyway, right?
Right, but now would there be like a pass through? Because I have this with USB-C.
Yeah.
You have to buy a pass through.
Yeah, exactly.
Where this you like daisy chain.
You have to buy a new dock as well.
Ugh.
Yeah. It just, you know, it's very apt.
What about, now wait.
John Gruber says,
here we go.
Look, let's compare this to arguments about removing floppy drives from the iMac in 1998.
It's not me.
What's on your playlist here?
It's my song. It's my song.
Love you. Leo, you can use
a
lightning
love took shape
port
on that fire escape. Who is this?
That's a good rhyme. It's Broadway. It's In the Heights. Lin Miranda's first
Leo.
I prefer the death metal
you're
version.
You're going to buy a new dock for your material.
Now what you could do, and I think one thing people are speculating is now you're going to see a plague of people walking around with their speakers blaring from their iPhone, listening to music coming out of their iPhone.
Yeah, I know.
Don't be that person at Starbucks like this. No, I'm at Starbucks.
Yeah.
That's the Kim Kardashian stuff.
No, I talked to him and I'm just like, really, the speakerphone button's for when you're in your car, not in line at Starbucks.
Yeah. Well, it's the same with the Apple Watch or the smartwatches. Just like, yeah, no, I'm just, oh, really? You're fine. Okay, great. Well, no, everyone's here. The herpes result was fine, so don't worry about it. You know,
I was watching.
It's only type one. Don't worry.
I'm a huge fan of Dick Tracy, and I actually think this is cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
you can't do that with that watch.
No, the Fitbit doesn't do that.
No.
Nah.
Stupid watch.
Stupid
watch. I guess we're all in agreement. This is just real test. I think it's going to be an interesting test of how devoted people are to the Apple ecosystem.
I think
WWDC made some very credible reasons for wanting to be all Apple, all Mac, iPhone, Apple Watch. They will all work together. You'll be able to walk up to your Macintosh and your iPhone will unlock the and so there's really buy-in into that ecosystem. Will the
lights up on Washington Heights?
Here we go, and you're going to buy Johnny Ives
makes. Is this now
mix?
Sort of Twit the musical?
I don't know.
Going down
Tim
the
Cook's
aisle.
Tim Cook's
going
to bring out a new headset.
So I have no idea what I was talking about. So it's a question of whether people will. Would this be enough for
I think Apple is going through a long, ever since Jobs died, is going through a long experiment as to how badly they can screw their customer base and still keep them. You know, it's by increments. How much, what can we sell them that's useless? What can we sell them that doesn't work? They've lost that focus that Jobs
sad
gave them.
Something's, you know, there is this big question of, you know, post Steve Jobs, is the company going to decline, go sideways, or go up?
Yeah.
And people have been looking at it, and it looked like with the iPhone 6, like, okay, yeah, they still
most
got it.
Most successful, most profitable company of all time.
Right. And then you start, then you're like, oh, the watch looks so promising, and then the watch is not actually very good.
No.
And you're like, okay, well, now I got to check in that box. Then you look at the new iOS release, and it's like, the most interesting thing is emojis. It's like, and what's going to come out that's going to be transformative or interesting? And all I see is more SKUs of the existing product base, like the iPad Pro.
Isn't the problem to some degree that you can't do much with a new smartphone that will make it unique?
We've reached peak smartphone.
That. Well,
now, taking it's a unique approach to say, hey, our newest feature is we're taking a feature out.
Yes.
Yeah.
But they'll make the case that the audio is going to be better because you have an external DAC, you have a higher quality DAC.
If you ask most people, is your audio good enough as it is? Most people.
It's from the company that's been selling them those crappy white earbuds for.
Oh God, those things leak. Pat, leak sound like nothing else. If you've got one of those irritating people on the bus or the train who's got their little iBuds in their ears,
Twisted Mister in our chat room has an interesting
with everyone else.
Interesting statement. Invincible companies: HP, Sony, Compaq. All trash themselves doing exactly what Apple's doing.
That's a good argument.
Not a bad argument.
Yeah, I mean, I'd add IBM into there, but yeah.
Well, they sold their hardware business when they're getting really
good. Yeah, they got out when the getting's good, and then Carly Fiorina bought into it.
In a way, that's
bad.
What HP's done, haven't they? They spun off the PC division.
Yeah. It's, I think the issue is we've kind of reached peak iPhone, and the iPhone was such a transcendent, huge product that was so wildly profitable. What could they add to the iPhone 7 is my question for you guys that would make you immediately buy it? Like, is there something that you're missing or something that you can predict would make you go, I have to have it?
No.
And that's where I think a lot of the smartphone companies are going to have a problem. Does the Samsung S8 or 7 whatever comes next, or the iPhone 7 or 8, does it actually make you wait in line?
You know, I remember.
I think VR is going to be very powerful.
That would be one. Yeah. I, only one I can think of.
I remember, that's about or Magic Leap or AR or some form of new UI.
You can't build Magic Leap into a smartphone.
You can't see through it.
Yeah. I mean, the big thing with
one of the takeouts from. You've got a camera. So,
I see.
We've had augmented reality browsers on phones before.
We've got, one of the things from Google I.O. was they're bringing out this new range of VR-ready phones, which have up to spec, decent memory, decent screen latency, good screens all along the way. They're going to cost a fair amount more, and they're going to have to run Android N and whatever they're calling back then. But that could be as someone who's got, the Samsung VR could be a good reason to buy.
There's no question that Android has spent this time catching up. I remember talking to Steve when he was on the beach, when he was in between Apple One and Apple Two. He was working for Pixar and Next. He ran Pixar and started Next. And he was very clear. And now, because remember, this is Steve mad at being fired at Apple. But he said, we had a lead against Microsoft. We had a 10-year lead when we came out with the Macintosh in 1984. We squandered that lead.
Yeah.
And by 1994... Windows had caught up. And he was talking about Windows 3.1.1. He wasn't even talking about Windows 95. He said Windows had caught up. And he saw that as a clear and present danger for Apple. Is Apple today in the same position?
Apple's in serious trouble at the moment unless it can find something.
Because these phones, this is a HTC, OnePlus 3, $400. I would argue every bit as good in every respect as an iPhone. Looks, in fact, a lot like an iPhone. Has a headphone jack, I might add.
Cool. Yeah. And Xiaomi and Huawei come into the market and actually sort of start pushing into the U.S. Consumer.
Automatically plays show tunes, which is a selling point.
You do love your show tunes.
I love my show tunes. There's nothing that isn't better with a show tune.
Funeral?
I've already made my playlist. Yeah. I've already made my playlist. No, I actually did because I don't know. I was feeling depressed a couple of months ago.
You made a playlist?
I made
for
my
funeral?
Funeral playlist. Well, it's good to think about these things ahead of time.
Actually, I can say the wife and I have discussed this.
Freebird?
As well. She is getting
Freebird is not on it. It's sad songs. I want people to cry at my funeral.
There's going to be a lot of joy to
be happy songs, but one of them is Rent. The song about, 5,750 minutes. Anyway, I think could you sing that at my
funeral?
I'll
sing that at your funeral for sure. Lock it up. Lock it up. Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today. Let's go crazy.
I
would have loved Highway to Hell, but I discussed this with my sister. And
you can't do Highway to Hell.
No,
Stairway to Heaven.
Because this is for other music.
Stairway to Heaven, Highway to Hell.
No, yeah. There's no way Stairway to Heaven is going to
be. By the way, congratulations. Led Zeppelin.
They won.
Won in court. I think it's cool.
It's a long case going on for 50 years.
Yeah.
What was the deal? This was a new case against Led Zeppelin, but brought by another band
that they toured with.
A great influence.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's just one tiny little riff. Clearly inspired. Yeah. The rest of the song has nothing to do with it.
Yes, exactly.
It's just one little riff.
It's we're back to the API, software API situation. Yeah. It's just
what's going on with the monitor? They discontinued Apple. Discontinued the cinema display.
So Apple has said we're not going to make monitors anymore. Now there's a couple of possibilities. Couple of possibilities. One is that they have a new monitor and they're just selling off the stock.
That's my understanding.
Well, but that's not the understanding I get from Apple's own statement. Did you read what Apple said when, let me see if I can find this. They basically said, there's a lot of other people making great monitors. Just get one of those.
Mm.
Does that sound like a company that's selling off
stock?
That's
bizarre. They really said that? Because I literally was tweeting to Tim Cook about this. Like, I bought the Mac Pro with 4K, the cylinder, and I had to, for my video editing folks... And I had to buy like Asus monitors or LG 4K monitors to run with it because they don't make a 4K monitor. Then I bought the 5K iMac. And the iMac, then I wanted to get a second monitor. I'm like, am I supposed to buy a second iMac and use it as a pass-through display? Or am I? So then I bought the widescreen LG. It makes no sense.
Here's what Apple says. We're discontinuing the Apple Thunderbolt display available through Apple.com, Apple's retail stores, Apple authorized resellers. While supplies last, there are a number of great third-party options available for Mac users.
Until we come out with something better.
Here's what I think. A monitor is a commodity. Apple doesn't even want to be in this business. Hmm. There are too many other people underselling them with great monitors. I mean, you can go to Dell and get a fantastic 27-inch, 34-inch display for less than Apple sells its Thunderbolt display for. So I think they – and there's another reason. They don't want to make computers that need monitors anymore. They only make two right now, the Mac Mini and the Mac Pro, neither of which I can imagine are very good sellers. The Mac Mini is not particularly where they want to be. They sell the iMac. They all make MyMacs. They'll still make iMac monitors.
High margin.
And one of the ways that the iMac 5K works is because it is built into the system. They can have a dedicated chip running that monitor.
Yeah, dedicated GPU,
So it's my feeling that Apple says, I don't want to be in this market.
I think it's a head fake. It's a head fake because they've been, you know, they've been talking about this television service. So I think they're out of the monitor
They're going to make a TV?
Well, they've been talking about it for a long time.
And they've
by the way, we should say, they have not been talking about
it for a long time.
Well,
they've been negotiating with, they have Apple TV.
Well, they do want to buy, they want to get cable on Apple TV.
Content. And there was somebody floated buying HBO at some point. So they clearly know Amazon's in the content business. Netflix is a home run. The Apple TV is getting more sophisticated, has a more powerful processor in it. I think they're going to make, I still believe they're going to make an actual physical TV. And I think that this is some sort of head fake, and maybe they're just going to jump the fence and make an 8K monitor or, you know, make a 5K monitor, something truly transformative, and they just don't want to tip their cards.
Yeah, it's a possibility. I mean, my read of this was they will have a better monitor coming along in a couple of months, clear the shelves out, get the...
Certainly that would be the normal course of events. It's just that weird thing about there are plenty of other third-party monitors.
That
it's
statement
so weird.
Is very oddly written.
Yes.
Because it doesn't say until we start making them or
that's the implication.
Tune in to another time. It's like you can enjoy them while they're still in stock.
It seems like they're writing the end.
Also, you never really trust Apple to say the end.
I'm waiting for the stinger at the end after the credits.
Yeah.
All
right.
After the credits.
You think Morgan Freeman's going to come on and say he's going to have an eye patch and
something like that.
I'm sorry, that was Samuel Jackson.
Sam Jackson.
Yeah, I was going to say
he's going to have an eye patch.
The monitors on no mother.
I think it'll be. I think it's going to be an. I think they're going to come out with the Apple TV monitor with a GPU in it. Something transformative.
Yeah. And it's self-driving.
You drive anyway.
Well, it comes.
You can actually ride it like a hoverboard.
If they had a car with a TV in it?
Well, that's why everybody's doing this.
Well, that's instant. But unfortunately, come back to the EU rules, you can't have a car with a TV in it.
You can't?
No, because it distracts from...
They can in England.
If the driver can see... Now
you'll have to drive on the left.
Understandably, I've been suffering from Brexit-induced Tourette's for the rest of the show. But, you can't drive a car and watch the TV at the same time. It's not doable without killing people. Okay, small rant done. Hold on.
Let's take a break. We're going to have more. Ian Thompson, it's great to have you from theregister.co.uk.
Always fun.
Always a pleasure. Love it. Did you bring your lovely wife?
She, I think, is in the back of the audience somewhere, but if not, then I'm
walking
home.
Stand up and scream if you're here. She didn't come.
Say Brexit.
Home. Brexit. Say Brexit! She's sleeping. She's finally getting a little sleep after that long week.
I'm going to have to cycle home at this, right? I'm going to... She's got the car.
She says, I'm out of here. Also with us, Jason Calacanis from Calacanis.com and...
At Jason.
At Jason. And... Do you want to say... aren't you still doing that thing?
Inside.com?
Inside.com.
Go check out Inside.com. We're doing email newsletters in verticals.
It's a newsletter now. Yeah,
what we found was nobody ever uses their news apps.
Right.
We got over a quarter million people, half million people to download it, and then 0.5% we use it every day. It was like really brutal.
That's straight out of Silicon Valley.
Well, if we spend more money, we're going to just burn through all cash we have. So then we took the same people who registered and we emailed the top like 10%.
Mm.
They opened the email 40-50%. Like known email rate.
Amazing.
So it's the same content, and now we're getting this thing. So then we did Inside VR, Inside EVs. And we're doing Inside Security. So we're just doing a series of newsletters twice a week. Go check out Inside.
That's smart. And you have pinpointed the topics that
we'll do Inside AI.
The hot ones.
Yeah, basically, if you remember the trade show, the trade magazine business? I'm just going to recreate that.
That's brilliant.
So I'll see how many in email, because 95 cents on every dollar we spend goes into the content.
Oh, that's beautiful. There's no print.
There's no print, and there's no
trucks.
Apps. So we were spending.
You put ads in it?
And we put ads in it, exactly.
That's the revenue?
That's the revenue model. Just put an ad in it. But I'm just, you know, I don't need to
run. What is Kevin Rose doing?
He's doing a company called...
I know he's Hodinkee, but he's got Hodinkee, now, yeah. He's got a newsletter, a monthly newsletter.
He does once a week, once a month.
Is that the same idea?
Yeah, I mean, here's the thing about email. There's some weird thing that occurred. One, we figured out spam, right? Like, spam got solved.
Yeah,
right.
You don't feel spam. Like, open your email box.
Thanks to Gmail, by the way.
Yeah. Then all corporate communications kind of bounced out of your inbox because of HipChat and other services by Atlassian. Great company. I got you, brother.
Thank you.
And then, you know, social networks took all photos and private communication or a large percentage out of email. So then email became all of a sudden like, oh, this is the important stuff.
Yeah.
And a great content delivery mechanism. So we're really leaning into it. I think it's going to work in a major way.
He's at the journal.email. By the way,
yeah.
How did he get the .email? Because I've been trying to get .email.
I didn't know that was out yet.
It's apparently, it's out for him.
Really?
He must know somebody.
Already. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's
But I guess it's the same idea.
Well, if you...
And you build a community, right?
Yes. And here's the thing. Journalism, we talk about journalism being broken. What I love about the email model is journalists on most publications, BuzzFeeds, Business Insiders, whatever, Gawker, they're trying to get people to click on social media. Mm-hmm. So it drives the editorial in a certain very nasty, disturbing,
very
bizarre,
bad.
Untrue...
Very bad.
Way.
Well, particularly the research you saw this week that of the articles forwarded on social media, less than half of them are read.
Of course, right? These people retweet. They're like, I like that sentiment. Yeah. Boom. I'm outraged. But then with email, what is the writer's motivation? To not have you unsubscribe or hit the reply key and tell you this is stupid or wrong.
Right.
So when you think about journalist behavior at these other publications, they're driven to do link bait. At my publication, in my publishing house, they're driven to not have people unsubscribe, which means they're driven to do high quality journalism again. So I'm like a you know, an old journalist publisher, and I just want to like get one more swing at the bat and build one more great publishing house, one more great Engadget,
how interesting,
one more great print magazine like Silicon Reporter, where I get it right and journalism is saved and quality again. I feel like I got one more swing at the bat. It doesn't mean I'll succeed.
It's a good medium.
But I think there's something there.
It's a good medium.
So we'll see.
Yeah, I'm just looking. Kevin doesn't put ads in it. I think it really is for him. It's about building community, right? And he's got a podcast.
Yeah,
so promotes
he's got
that,
a voice. He wants people to understand what he's thinking.
Voice.
Yeah, have a voice.
Yeah.
And he doesn't have to link bait. He doesn't have to trick you.
No.
You opted in. There's no trickery.
10 reasons why Apple is going down. You won't believe number 8.
Oh,
you
know,
exactly. It's in every journalist's mind is, am I going to get fired for not getting enough traffic? And in some publications, they're actually putting targets for people.
Oh,
and so the journalists...
Some publications are paying based on, you know, look
Gawker
at Forbes.
Gawker did that for a while.
Yeah. I mean, look
Forbes.
At Forbes where you...
You actually get paid based on traffic.
Based on traffic. Bonus. Which is just a recipe for people just writing useless clickbait.
No wonder it's all crap. It really explains it.
The more misleading, the greater the chances you get your bonus.
Yes, exactly.
Funny thing is, I'm going to do a newsletter when I lose my voice. Right? Because I don't need a voice. I have a voice.
Well,
but when I lose my voice, I'll do it.
We're building a Leo Laporte AI. We're never going to die.
I think it can happen. I think we now have, after 10 years, after 40 years of broadcasting, 10 years of Twit, we have enough clips, enough sound bites.
Leo Laporte
soundboard. We can assemble anything. I actually am not completely joking.
You could.
I'm not completely joking. I believe that there is enough words with enough inflections and
styles.
They
brought back Tupac.
They brought back Tupac.
They can bring back Leo.
It's my dream. I want to be at Coachella.
You could give the eulogy at your own funeral.
And that would be weird.
I'd like to sing a song.
Dearly beloved, we're here today to bury me. What? I just would like...
Isn't that the plot of Prometheus Unbound? He's at his own...
Yeah.
By the way, my cousin and my uncles, I'd like to say F you. You could literally just
You're
go through and like have your revenge at your funeral.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
No, and by the way, where are all my friends?
That's called the reading of the will. I think everybody does that.
You could go
everyone
through
who
all
truly
the people
loved
who
me, stand
up
and drop trow immediately.
I can see you.
What's in the box?
Well, look at this. This is
What's
cool.
in the box?
It's actually a drinking glass.
There you go.
But before you get the drinking glass, you might want to look at the automatic inside.
Oh, ODB.
You know about
port.
Automatic, right?
Now,
you can't use this with a Tesla, right?
Yeah, you can.
They have an ODB2 port?
Every car is required to have one. Since 1999.
Now, one of the things this does, of course, is tell you gas mileage, how much you paid, how much that, I love this, how much that trip cost.
Where the car is when your kids are driving.
Where the car is. So, you know, a lot of people, I think they go to Costco to get that giant bag of chips and save 58 cents. Mm. But then the automatic says, and by the way, the gas cost you $1.50. Now you know, maybe that's not the best, most economical way to do it.
Right.
This is fascinating. Now, I guess you wouldn't get gas mileage information on a Tesla. Mm. I'm glad to know I could take this to my Tesla.
You can plug it in, All of them, you have to have that onboard diagnostics.
Since 1996, every car in America has the OBD2 port. You have it. Mm-hmm. It's, if you've never seen it, you probably haven't because no one notices. It's in the dark under where your knees are underneath the steering wheel.
2 seconds to install.
You plug it in. You put the app on your iPhone or your Android device. It uses Bluetooth to bond. I think it's Bluetooth LE. It's very easy to pair it. Now, all of a sudden, you get an engine check light. Automatic tells you what it means. In fact, it will tell you not only what it means, but where the nearest repair shop is, which is awesome. You keep track of your fuel mileage. You can set custom low fuel warnings. You can even ask your Amazon Echo how much gas is left in the tank. Now, see, I would like to do that with a Tesla. Yep. How much battery? I guess I can do that with a Tesla.
Fitbit for your car.
It's Fitbit for your car. You get, if you got a teen, it will tell you what your teen's driving stats are. On the Android device, Automatic will set your Android phone to do not disturb and disable the keyboard if you set it up. You don't have to do this, by the way, but if you've got a teen driver, you will want to do this.
I was thinking, actually, that I know of a similar system which is being used by a bloke to test his teen's technology ability. If she can actually
disable this
and get around it without him finding out.
Has geofencing. You know, if you can set a geofence and say, if the teen drives outside of this area, I want an email, I want a text message. Automatic, of course, has 24/7 crash response, so that makes you feel good too. The dashboard web app gives you all sorts of information, lets you export trips, but I'm using If This Then That. So every time I turn off the key in the ignition, If This Then That sends a summary, including a map and gas mileage and everything of every trip to Evernote. So it's all in, I've got Evernote notebooks for every trip I take. It works with your Nest, so you can set it so that your Nest turns on the heat when you arrive. Your mechanic, FreshBooks, do you keep track of business mileage? It will do that for you in FreshBooks or Expensify.
If you lose your car.
You never lose your car. And I actually
know where you parked.
I have
used
this.
It's a Disneyland feature.
I went somewhere. I went out of town. I don't want to say where. I was in a town. I didn't know where I was. I was just looking around, looky-looing around, and I went, oh,
where did I park?
Where did I park?
Yeah.
And I had no idea where I was. Launched the automatic app, and it said, you parked here, and it even gave me the way to get home. Now, normally it's $99.95. Mm-hmm. The software is free, but when you use our – and there's no monthly subscription, by the way. When you use our special offer code TWIT, you're going to save 20%. I love this thing. Automatic.com/TWIT. TWIT offer code saves you 20%. It is fantastic. And you think I might be joking, but in fact, when you take the automatic out of its specially designed packaging, you actually do, in fact, get a travel cup. I'm just saying. I don't know if that's going to put you over the top. If you're reluctant, maybe you're thinking,
if you're thirsty,
gosh, if only I got a travel cup, maybe I would buy that. Well, you do. Automatic.com/twit. Don't forget the offer code to get 10%.
This is, of course, the country where you can get a drive-through margarita. So, you know.
Can you?
Apparently so. In some states, you can get drive-through alcohol, which is
crazy.
Absolutely bonkers.
That's a skit. That's not true.
I hope so, but
think about this: if we do get self-driving cars in this lifetime,
then
there'll
you
be
will.
A lot of drunk drivers.
Oh yeah,
sure.
Drunk riders.
Oh sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's what Uber's for.
Well, I mean, in L.A., it did revitalize the nightlife because people in L.A.
Exactly.
would not drink because they were rightfully concerned about, you know.
No, exactly.
What do you think? Do you think this is a watershed moment? C-SPAN covering the sit-in.
That was fascinating.
At the House.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
But now C-SPAN doesn't own the cameras. The Congress owns the cameras. And the rules are we turn off the cameras when we adjourn. But the sit-in continued past adjournment. Cameras go off. C-SPAN cannot cover it. However, I want to say there's some members of the House that are technologically savvy, but in fact, they asked their staffers, and their staffers showed them how to use Periscope.
Young person, show me how to use this modern technology.
And Facebook Live, and they broadcast. Periscope kind of went down, but Facebook Live continued, and C-SPAN found out about it, picked it up, and continued the broadcast.
Brilliant.
Wow.
Yeah, this is a classic example of new technology subverting.
It's just amazing that the GPUs in these phones have gotten so good and the LTE networks have gotten so good
You can stream live. I mean, we used to spend a lot of money on equipment.
Yeah.
So we could stream live. In fact,
before
us.
You streamed badly.
Yeah, yes. It was crap. Before us, remember
Satellite
Dan Rather at the 1968 convention with a backpack?
Yeah, you with a backpack at South by Southwest.
I was still wearing a backpack.
10 years ago, yeah.
We have made great strides. And yeah, now this is all you need to broadcast.
It's a broadcast shock.
Yeah.
I'm seeing more and more apps. I got pitched this week on two different apps that are basically using this as a studio where not only does it have, obviously, the bandwidth to do it properly, but they have a teleprompter. So you look at your phone's camera, and it's running a teleprompter, so you can do your news report, and then it sends it up.
Yeah.
And you can either do it live, or you can send up the stream, and you have the teleprompter, you have people asking you questions. So this is going to become a thing where news reporters are going to have this, and they're just going to speak into it.
I've ordered this, and I don't know why it's taking so long. Livestream is selling a camera for Facebook Live. Huh. What's interesting about this camera, it looks like a plain old webcam, right? It's got a Ray mic, not just a regular mic. But it has a 4K sensor. And so what you can do is split the 4K up into four 1080p streams. So you actually stream for this 1080p. You're not going to stream for 4K. But you can switch cameras, in effect, by pointing it with you use your phone to aim it. You touch where you want it to be, but it also has face recognition, so it will follow you. So if you're walking around, and so you're going to get a subset of the total stream.
That's interesting.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. Yeah, these 3D cameras are going to be able to do it as well. I was literally at my daughter's little graduation step-up ceremony, and for the first time I saw the Robert Scoble of the event, somebody with a stick,
Lord.
On the top of the stick was the 360 camera.
Oh, right.
And I just thought, wow, now I'm having my picture taken without knowing it.
Well, that's what's really unusual.
And
about
I was
those.
Like, I kind of like, I don't really it's care. But now I was just thinking, they're not aiming the camera at me.
But
I'm having a video of me created the whole time. I'm under surveillance.
Yeah.
At the thing. So if I'm picking my nose or checking my phone or
you're always on
whatever, you're now being recorded 24/7 because some dope's got this thing on a stick.
They used these cameras at the presidential debate, one of the Republican debates. And I used my Gear VR to tune in to watch. And they had many cameras, but the one they started with was placed in the back. And it was sitting next to a cameraman. It was overlooking an audience. It was looking at the crowd. I'm sitting here. I'm watching the cameraman literally pick his nose, chew some gum. Because he doesn't realize.
He has no idea he's on camera.
I'm on camera. I'm looking down here. There's a guy sitting in a seat. He's on his phone. Yeah. And I can read what he's looking at on his phone.
Yep.
I'm thinking, you're being streamed nationwide.
Yeah.
No idea. It's going to take a little.
Lots of people having the crafty ball scratch or, the sort of the end of the armpit thing. And
I was going to bring it up earlier. It's very
crafty ball scratch?
Yeah. It's a very interesting technique you have, Ian.
Well,
I can see it perfectly from here. The rest of the audience. They have no idea.
That's an advanced technique.
If only that could be the title of the show, I would die happy. Ladies and gentlemen, this would be a good time to wrap things up. Yes. There's so much more to talk about, including the Rolls-Royce remote-controlled robo-ships.
Sorry.
Paperware. Paperware.
But let's table it for next time. And I
welcome
sure
to hour three. Hour three.
Yeah, this was a lot of fun.
It's a lot of show.
So much fun. Thank you. Well, we did a kind of a little go off script a little bit at the beginning.
Jumped
I
the
wanted
fence.
To talk about Brexit, but we had Ian, and I thought it was great to have you and your Scottish.
I appreciate it, and for letting me get
it out of your
PTSD
system.
Out the way, and just we will deal with this. We are stronger than this.
That's
you know,
it's just yes. We will fight them on the oceans. We will fight them on the beaches.
Did you ever hear Churchill's follow-up to that?
No.
Because he gave this great speech, we will fight them, and we will fight them in the hedgerows, we will never surrender.
Never surrender.
And he sat down next to his Home Secretary in Parliament, and just as an aside to him, saying, we'll fight them with broken bottles, because that's all we're going to have left by the end of that.
Is that true or apocryphal?
Okay, it's from Churchill, so it's apocryphal. He made up so much of his own history that it was...
My prediction is they roll it back.
Yeah.
I think there's going to be some sort of realization where that the people who voted, who were like, I was doing a burn it down vote, didn't realize it was going to get burnt down.
Yeah.
They're going to repeal it.
The only way they can do that is if they hold a new general election, which is going to be very difficult to do because they changed the rules in 2011. So,
even though Cameron stepped down, that is not a call for an election.
No.
He's just going to be replaced as the head of his party.
No, he'll be replaced as the head of his party and then become prime minister. So, under the rules.
Could be Boris Johnson, which we mentioned,
yeah,
which is
I know.
Wild.
The guy that looks like a, oh, no, I can't say that on there. No.
Yeah. Here we go, hour three.
But couldn't Parliament call for an election, a general election?
Back in the day, before they changed the rules in 2011, either the Prime Minister could say, right, we're calling an election now, go to the palace and say, excuse me, madam, could we hold an election? Or the majority of MPs could vote to, could pass a motion of no confidence and dissolve Parliament.
Yeah.
However, the rule change is now 3/4 of MPs have to vote on that.
Or 5 years, whichever comes first.
Yeah, or 5 years, in which case, you know, the country might as well be burning down because 5 years, you know, 3 years from now when the next election is scheduled.
So the same party is in power, they're just going to pick a different head of the
party.
They're
going to pick a different head of the party. And if they went to a vote of no confidence, then it would probably fail because enough Conservative MPs would have to vote against their own government and would then get deselected by their own local parties. So I hope you're right. I really hope you're right.
So this petition is kind of meaningless.
Oh, the petition's totally meaningless. Okay. The petition was... I've seen a number of reports on this. The petition was apparently started by a vote leave person before the election.
Because
he thought he was going to lose. And then it garnered like 20 signatures or something. And then after the election, somebody saw this and thought, oh, that's a good idea. I'll sign my name to this.
Wow.
It's never going to happen. You know, they will have to roll it back some way. But
strange days.
I don't understand how they can do it under the current system.
Strange days indeed. I know you all want to go home and watch the season-ending Game of Thrones.
That was last week. That was the drop the microphone episode. Oh,
wow,
my God.
Huh? The Battle of the Bastards.
I just don't understand how you kill Khaleesi. It's your favorite episode.
Hey, spoiler alert.
Sorry.
Hey.
It's my standard joke. I did it at the poker game.
So mean.
It's like, how do you kill Khaleesi and the dragon?
You can't kill her. She's
one
the whole
episode?
Thing, right.
Everybody loves that character.
The problem is, it's completely believable because
of course,
George R.R.
Martin
will kill anybody.
Yeah, if you think this ends well, you have not been paying attention.
have you seen the redub they've done of the battle? With Leroy Jenkins,
spoiler alert,
amazing. You know,
if you haven't seen last week's Game of Thrones,
tune out now.
But I think it would be appropriate to end with Leroy. And
I haven't seen it. Oh my God,
I haven't either. I remember seeing it, and I didn't watch it because I hadn't watched the.
You could literally watch the Leroy Jenkins thing every year. We should have like a Leroy Jenkins Day.
There should be a Leroy Jenkins Day
for people who are like Leroy Jenkins.
I can quote huge sections of that whole speech because I've watched it too often.
And for those who don't know, Leroy Jenkins is a character in World of Warcraft, a made-up character in World of Warcraft, who will go on raiding parties with you, but inevitably just goes, whatever the plan is, charging into the fray. And that's the kind of guy you want to work on your team. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for joining us. We hope you'll come back next Saturday, or sorry, Sunday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern Time.
32.33
AM. Run the numbers on this,
2200
please.
2200 UTC.
We usually do.
All right, thumbs up.
Ready, guys?
Let's do this. Leroy!
Yes! Yes!
Another twit is in the can. Bye-bye, everybody.